right in front.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the June 20th, 2017 meeting of the Tompkins County Legislature. The first order of business tonight is a public hearing, but before that, I just want to remind you that in the event of an emergency, we have exits to my right in the back of the room and to my left at the front of the room. In case of a fire, please don't use the elevator. And if you have electronic devices like cell phones, please silence them. That includes legislators. I'll read the announcement of the public hearing. The Tompkins County Legislature will hold a public hearing at 5:30 p.m. concerning the 2017-2018 operating budget request for Tompkins-Cortland Community College. And we'll open the public hearing, and if anyone wants to speak at the hearing, it's not necessary at the hearing to send up a blue card. But if people would like to speak, please step to a microphone. Tell us who you are and where you're from. Anyone like to speak about the public hearing? I see Dr. Haynes. I'm sorry, was Bob, did you want to speak? Okay. Do you want to wait for Dr. Haynes to speak first? Okay. Carl, you want to come up to the front and have a chair?
Did you want me to kind of present an overview of the budget at this time? Is that
we'd love to hear from you.
Questions?
We need the full presentation, but maybe a brief one would be great.
Okay. Well, I hope everyone has a copy of the budget booklet in front of them. And I think as we've talked in previous discussions that we've had regarding our budget this year, this has been a particularly challenging year for us. We started off with a projected deficit of $2.1 million, which we had to begin wrestling with back in January. The outcome of that is we have, without going through again all the details, we have reduced staffing at the college by 19 full-time equivalent positions. A good number of those were accomplished through retirement incentives, vacancies that occurred, and six of those full-time equivalencies were actual positions where we had to eliminate lay off staff, I should say. In addition to that, we had a small increase in state support this year of $50 per FTE. But if you look at the budget page on page three, or the actual budget page, I think it's page three in your booklets. And if you look at the New York State support, you'll notice that that's still $27,000 less than last year, even with that $50 increase, that being the case primarily because of the enrollment decline we experienced this year. We are increasing tuition by 3%. And we are projecting, again, a small decline in enrollment for next year. And we are asking the sponsors to support an allocation from our fund balance of $246,000. As you know, that originally was $200,000. But with the Cortland legislature not willing to support a 1% increase in the sponsor share, why we're requesting that additional $46,000 come from our fund balance for next year. So on the expenditure side, you'll notice that the bottom section of the page, personnel services are reduced by $1 million year over year, primarily as a result of the staffing reductions that we've made at the college. And the equipment line looks reduced, even though some of that is coming out of a special project fund. But we are getting support from our foundation to support equipment needs for the college next year, so that's been extraordinarily helpful to us as well. And, again, employee benefits going down somewhat, again, as a result of staff reductions. So the bottom line budget before you tonight is 1.79% less than it was last year. I don't think there's been any other time, maybe once, that I've actually come to you with a budget that's less than the previous year, but that is exceptional. And, again, there's a whole lot of detail that underlines this, but that kind of gives you the broad overview, I think, of how we tackled a $2.1 million deficit and brought to you a balanced budget for next year.
It is a public hearing, so we need to hear from the public at this point. What I'd like to do is we'll go through the public hearing. We have a public presentation, but before we get into too far into privilege of the floor, we'll come back and do the college resolutions to try to help you there.
Okay.
At this point, Jim, you had your hand up.
I did, Mike. What I was going to suggest is that anybody from the public, please talk about the budget, TC3 budget, and then we would vote on the budget if that works for you. I think we're all pretty aware of what the budget is. We've looked at it two or three times. We've heard the explanation from Carl. Always very concise and to the point. And, I know there's at least one person here to talk about the TC3 budget.
So let's go to the members of the public for comments at the public hearing on the TC3 budget. Please step to the microphone, state your name and where you're from.
Bob? The microphone.
Yeah.
My name is Robert Lynch. I live at 175 Gray Road, town of Enfield. And I'm speaking just on my own behalf. I'm not representing the college or anybody else. But I am speaking as a private citizen, as a recent alumnus, graduate of a TC3 professional certificate program in 2015. So I know the college firsthand, and I know what a great job TC3 is doing. And I wish to express my support tonight for the 2017-2018 TC3 operating budget as revised by the Budget and Capital Committee, and also for that committee's recommendation, which will be voted on tonight, I understand, for the revised sponsored contribution, including the supplemental discretionary fund appropriation of about $46,500, money which essentially is to compensate for Cortland County's refusal to increase its contribution to the operating budget by the requested 1%, just 1%. TC3 is a good school. It's got a good faculty, a good administration. I've seen it firsthand. It's got a healthy attitude, a good mission. It's got a healthy future, a bright future, and it's got some very good graduates. And I've seen them, and I've been beside them, and I've studied beside them, and I've learned beside them. And I appreciate what the college has done to make this a good example of what higher education should be at the community college level. My only regret tonight is that the original plan could not be maintained, that both Tompkins and Cortland counties could have exercised that 1% increase, that mere 1% increase that was requested for sponsor contribution. Whereabouts in life, in our own personal finances, do we have only a 1% annual increase in an expenditure? And where in government is there just a 1% increase in the cost of asphalt or personnel or anything else? It just doesn't exist anymore. Where are Cortland County's priorities anyway? What were they thinking over there? What have they got in the water cooler at the legislative chambers over there? My only thought is that Cortland legislators have succumbed to the temptation of the Paul Ryan and Donald Trump austerity plans. Maybe they have, maybe they haven't, but it doesn't look good for the rest of us. Sure, we all love a tax cut, but please, not on the backs of our college-age children. Cut the spending somewhere else if you can. Of course, this year for them, it's probably win-win. Cortland gets to freeload on Tompkins County's generosity. Their kids get the tuition benefits, but they pay no more money. We have to pay the added freight. Shame on you, Cortland County. Pay your fair share, please. Something's got to change. And if someone's got to make that shot across the bow, maybe it's got to be me. Must TC3 actually have to become TC2? I hope not. Must we start talking severance? Must our county shoulder the full burden for our beloved community college and reap the full rewards? Maybe. I'm hoping it doesn't have to happen. But the ball is in Cortland's court now. This year, we do what we're proposing tonight. Next year, I think we have to talk seriously. And yes, the Cortland County young people are going to pay the price. But maybe this kind of shot across the bow will send a message to Cortland County's parents to pressure their legislators to pay their fair share. Please, Cortland County, pay your full weight. And thank you, Tompkins County, for coming in to rescue this community college. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else like to speak on the public hearing? Not seeing anyone? I'm going to close the public hearing. And I'm going to ask you to rise and with me and recite the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. May we have the roll call of members, please.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
I am present.
Mr. McKenna?
Here.
Mr. Morey?
Here.
Ms. Robertson?
Here.
Mr. Sigler?
Here.
Mr. Stein?
Hier stehe ich. Ich kann nicht anders.
Mr. Burbank?
Here.
Ms. Chalk?
I'm here in plain English tonight.
Mr. Dennis?
I'm here.
Mr. John?
Here.
Ms. Kellis?
I'm here.
Ms. Kiefer?
Present.
Mr. Klein?
Here.
Mr. Lane?
Here.
14 members present.
We have quorum, and we're all here. So, Jim, are you asking to do your resolutions before we go to the presentation
we have tonight? Yeah, it makes sense, doesn't it?
I'm happy to do that unless the group wants to talk about these resolutions. In that case, I'd really like to move them back further. What's the group's pleasure? Martha?
Why don't we have the presentation first and then the resolution?
Presentation will take about 10 minutes, we think. Okay, let's do that. We're very pleased tonight to have a group that's come to actually honor one of our own. This is the Finger Lakes Pulse group, and I'm going to invite them to come up to the podium tonight. And I don't know who will be the spokesperson or more than spokespersons, but please come up here, and we'd like to have you go ahead with your presentation. This is Sepola Dennis.
Thank you,
Deborah. I couldn't think of your first name.
That's okay.
Sorry.
That's fine. Thank you, Mike. I want to start tonight by recognizing Kendra Adams. Say her name, Kendra Adams, June 13th, 2017. She's the 13th trans woman of color killed in the United States this year. So on to something that's a little bit more pleasant. We want to thank you tonight for allowing Finger Lakes Pulse to present our very first Ally of the Year Award to a most deserving public servant. First, I want to thank the county staff for working with us on this presentation to make it a very special and memorable occasion. This evening, we express our appreciation to a person who has invited people from the LGBTQ+ community to the table. She has shown interest in our opinions, thoughts, and perspectives. This simple invitation to participate has allowed us to highlight our needs as gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender, and non-binary individuals in new ways. It has given us a voice to express our similar struggles while recognizing that we are all affected in different ways by policies and laws. This year's recipient, Leslyn McBean Claiborne, has a unique understanding of these struggles. Immigrating to this country from Guyana, South America, she has faced discrimination in many ways and has shared those situations, drawing parallels to our own similar experiences. With this understanding, Leslyn has used her power in Ithaca and Tompkins County to make it safer for our community. She went to many local businesses and asked them to put up safe zone cards. This made a huge difference for us, and I now get my oil changed at Monroe because they have a safe zone card. At the last meeting, she led the legislature in recognizing June as Pride Month and raising the rainbow flag. And with that, I'd like to highlight some of clips in her own words. So I think we have...
We can suspend just a minute while we drop the screens.
I think we have the assistance from our media folks. While that's going down, I'm going to just continue with this. It's pretty loud. Yeah, I'll wait.
It's always like me to bring the suspense.
It is.
And drama.
Here we go. I think here we go.
Yay, Supreme Court. Yay, marriage equality. Woohoo. Let me wish my girl, Gail Trimble,
louder,
was alive, that she can see this moment. She talked about it will happen many, many years ago before her untimely death. And, you know, she's wherever she is hearing about this. So on Thursday, this Thursday tonight, 5 o'clock in the afternoon, Stewart Park, or 5:30, might have been my book, Stewart Park, community celebration for marriage equality. I'm just thrilled. So please make an appearance, show your support, community, be there. If you can lend your support, financially, bring some paper products, you know, cups, plates, forks, napkins, anything. It would be very, very helpful. We need to celebrate the pride that we all love when we respect and honor people's human rights. I had the privilege of attending a conference in Atlanta last week through the weekend, called Facing Race, with a number of other people here from Ithaca. About 2,500 people attended this conference. And it was quite interesting to see the variety of not only workshops, but concentrated discussions around a movement of love for all of us to be able to transform this country to a place where everyone feels loved and included. It was the first time I had gone, to a conference in a very long time, and I was very pleased to see something as simple as all gender bathrooms. And they're just really simple things that people can do to make such a difference and make everyone feel welcomed and included. It was amazing to attend some of the workshops, especially the ones on deconstructing racism, or the ones that talk about how entire small communities have transformed themselves in such a way that issues of justice and equality isn't a second thought, but it's just the way we do business every day. And it was encouraging and enlightening, and they're all little things that we all could be doing, but we feel very concerned, and more often than not, we resort to our safe space. And I bring that up because I just remember some of the conversations some of my colleagues here around the table had with me around the resolution or proclamation that I brought with regard to Indigenous Peoples Day. And I don't think people realize just the privilege that you exhorted in your statements when you said they can choose any other day. Who are they, and who decided that this day only belongs to a certain group of people? So I just wanted to point that out, because it just sort of, you know, it's things like that that people think of when they decide to embark on a movement of change and inclusion. It was a very powerful conference. It occurs every 2 years, and I would encourage anyone to look for it. It is brought to the community organized by Race Forward, which is an organization. And I want to give a big thank you to the Multicultural Resource Center, particularly Kabina Colon, organizing the group going and reaching out to folks. I got in on the tail end of it because I heard of it. So big thank you to them and raising funds from this community to allow us to go. People literally donated towards paying for people to attend the conference, so I appreciate that. So I hope that you will, you know, I didn't just bring a button just for the sake of bringing a button. It really had meaning to me being there, and really hope that we will take this to heart. Within our lifetime, within the lifetime of the next generation, racism should not be existing in this country by any means. No one should feel afraid. I had the honor and privilege this past week to be, and I consider myself a representative of Tompkins County and the City of Ithaca, at the My Brother's Keeper Summit, National Summit, the final one hosted by My Brother's Keeper Alliance and the President of the United States at the White House. And so it was quite an honor to be there. It was quite an honor to sit in the same room with our current president and have him, he was the icing on the cake, of course, and have him address us, promise that as part of his work when he leaves office is to continue to raise the kind of monies that would be needed to support these programs that will address issues for our young brothers and, according to our president, our young sisters, because what's trending in our country as focus and attention is being put on the mass incarceration of young men of color, that more and more women, young women of color, are being thrown in jails and prisons. So kudos to all of you, and I hope we continue to do the good work around identifying those issues of aggression and those issues of poverty, and trying to do whatever we can to ease, to get rid, erase those barriers to particularly young people of color or young marginalized groups in general being able to reach their fullest potential. So I just wanted to share that bit of good news. How do we forward the community conversation around LGBTQ issues. And we hope at some point, I know Joe and Paul and I had a conversation at some point, and we hope at some point soon, in the near future, to not keep just talking about it, but to actually host a community-wide summit, a community-wide conversation about this, so that not just members of the LGBT community are hearing, but those who developers and those who are providing housing and those who are providing jobs really understand what are the issues that face this particular segment of our community and what can we be doing as a collective county or as a county collectively to make sure that we are trying to build an inclusive community. It's not the only issue, obviously, that we have to deal with. There are many, but this is one that has been rising to the surface. So we hope to, I just spoke with Martha this afternoon, you know, it's a big task, but we hope to model something after the housing summit that would bring in many different entities to the table to hear this kind and engage in this sort of conversation and solution building.
Thank you. We also want to acknowledge the significant burdens that come with being an action-oriented ally. It takes time, courage, and the willingness to step out of your comfort zone. Advocacy is also a family affair, whether the family wants to participate or not. And we acknowledge the sacrifices of Leslyn's husband and her children as they have shared her valuable time and energy with our community. Tompkins County is one of a handful of places in this country that many of us feel comfortable living openly. We have the second highest percentage of LGBTQ plus residents in the state of New York, second only to New York City. However, we still face challenges daily. Finger Lakes Pulse is dedicated to working with allies such as Leslyn to create a thriving, inclusive community that recognizes the diversity and individuality of all residents. And with that, I'll read what the plaque says. Ally of the Year 2017, Leslyn McBean Claiborne, in deep appreciation for her continued and consistent commitment to support lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and queer rights through her actions and advocacy work.
Leslyn, we'd like you to come up.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank all of you. Thank you. Okay, I was coming up in the elevator with Sharon, and I remember saying to my husband, folks need to just stop this nonsense. I don't like these things because I know I am a crying fool. And he said, why don't you just stop it? And if people want to honor you, accept that it's because you're doing something right. I only do what's right. I don't do the work I do for praise. I just do what's right, and I've always done that all my life. So whether it's fighting for labor, fighting for decent wages, fighting for families, to not separate families, whatever it is, I just do what's right. I appreciate being your ally of the year. Thank you all. But in true Leslyn form, I want to make one quick correction. I do. Allies usually can pack up and go to their safe space when they feel it's too much. I'm a partner. I'm in it.
Yes. Yes. And I brought my daughter up here with me. If you don't know Indira, this is her graduation day. And no, it's not from middle school like some people think. She's trying to get taller than me. It is from elementary school, so I apologize. I'm going to be running out of here to get to her graduation. But this young lady is my legislature baby, born in this legislature. Men in the legislature gave her her name. But she, like you said, has made so many sacrifices. My son is over there, Kelsey. They have made so many sacrifices to allow me to do the things that I do. And Indira is a powerhouse. Watch out for her in a few years. Because even now, she is beginning to let people know what is right and how to be protecting other human beings, not discriminating against them. I wonder where she got that from. So I'm very proud of you, Indira. I'm very proud of you, and I wanted to acknowledge you and honor you in front of this legislature. And thank you very much, Finger Lakes Pulse. I'm sorry I wouldn't be at the event on the 24th, because this here girl is a 200-meter track star, and we will be at the Junior Olympics in Rochester in Pennham, where she is running. So I'm sorry I wouldn't be there to celebrate and dance the night away with you all. So thank you again for honoring me. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
And we say congratulations, Leslin, and thank you, Finger Lakes Pulse, for your nice presentation and the video. I sort of had a sense of deja vu when I was listening to that. Yes, Carol.
I know it's not privilege of the floor yet. I'm not sure we are in session. I wondered if we might honor the memory of Kendra Adams.
Please go ahead.
And take a minute to do that. Can
Please
we do that? I'm sure you've all read about the horrible murder of a trans person of color in our community, and I think the articles have mostly referred to this person under one name, which is Josie Berrios, and Josie was known by that name throughout the community, but Josie was also known by the name Kendra Adams throughout the community. And normally what we would do on this body is have a moment of silence when we want to remember people who have been figures in our community or who have now died in a manner in which we want to recognize their memory. The Trans People of Color group nationally did the research and verified the perception that trans people of color are being killed way out of proportion to the general population, and encouraged us all to recognize that horrible fact with a campaign to say her name. Rather than a moment of silence, I want to ask that we all take a moment and say her name with me. Kendra Adams.
Kendra Adams.
Kendra Adams.
Kendra Adams.
Thank you.
Thank you, Carol. Very nice. Sad thing that happened in our community.
Please, Mr. Chair, my colleagues, I apologize, but I do have to go. I do not have a report from WDIC, except we will be meeting next week. But I have to go celebrate this young lady.
Thank you, Leslie. I know there are folks waiting for privilege of the floor. I'd ask their indulgence just a little longer. Jim, would you move the resolutions?
Mike, let me just say I apologize. I did not realize the program was going to be the length that it was, or I would have certainly suggested that we do it at this point. So at any rate, let me move the adoption of the 2017-2018 operating budget, Tompkins Cortland Community College, and I will move that.
I have a second from Glenn Morey. Do we have discussion?
A couple of items. The proposed 2017-2018 is $40,857,954, and our contribution is in the amount of $4,650. No, I'm sorry, $4,650,364.
Any other discussion? Anna Kellis. Okay, withdrawn. Ready to vote? Carol?
So is there some provision should Cortland County meet tomorrow night and change their minds? Is there some provision for us?
They've already met, I believe.
They did already meet.
The Budget and Finance Committee met last week and has voted for the 0% increase. So the resolution to try to modify that was defeated. So Thursday night I'll be going to the full legislature, but at this point the only resolution that will be in front of them is the one that's in front of you right now.
Okay. And what would be the process for us if they wanted to do something different? Would we be able to meet their challenge?
Well, I guess the process would be if some miracle happened and they just changed their mind, then there has to be a reconciliation, and I would be coming back here with another modified budget that would reflect their change. So I would be doing that at your next meeting, I assume.
Thank you.
However, I think that's not likely.
Rich John.
I certainly will support the budget. I regret that we can't support it at a better level. I just wanted to comment that, President Haynes, you have a jewel there. You've done a tremendous thing in your time at TC3. I've coached hockey for years, and the last 4 years I've coached the midgets. So it's a 15 to 18-year-olds, and one player after another finished high school and was unsure where they were going to go. And so I've seen one of them after the other, men and women, go to TC3 and find their way. And it is such a valuable resource. It pains me to vote a 0% increase. I wish we could do more. Thank you.
Thank you, Rich.
Ready to vote? Jim?
Two comments. One, I appreciated hearing from one Bob Lynch. I remember his voice very clearly on WTKO radio many years ago when radio was radio and as a news reporter. And all the things he said, I don't think any of us could have said it any better. And he has the luxury of being a private citizen to do that. My other comment is we've had a long and cherished relationship with TC3 and President Haynes. There's nobody better. He gets it. He understands what he has to do as a leader. When times were tough, he responded. When times were good, he asked for a little. And all the people that we deal with and all the people that ask us for money and we share money with, Carl's done a great job running his organization, and the SUNY system should be proud to have had him at the helm of one of their jewel community colleges. So thank you, Carl.
Thank you, Jim.
Martha?
Well, that's pretty much what I was going to say. But, I just really I want to thank you on behalf of all of us and on behalf of all the young and older people who've been able to take advantage of your gifts to the community through TC3 for all these years. And we're really going to miss you, Carl. Thank you for everything.
Thank you. Thank you, Martha.
Anna?
I just wanted to add, I've already praised you up and down for the last year. But I guess the one thing that I do want to add is that what I appreciate the most is how courageous you are and visionary and creative. And the things that you've added to the college are amazing, and I'm so impressed. and that I want to make sure that you know, for me and I'm sure for anyone, if any of those creative ideas keep coming, there's always an open door. I will push it. I will champion your vision because I believe in what you see, and I know you're going to continue to support them, and you're going to continue to be here. But, yeah, hopefully they'll keep flowing.
I hope so, too. And I'm confident in my successor that she will indeed pick up that challenge.
Excellent.
Let's proceed to a vote. On the resolution J, the operating budget for Tompkins-Cortland Community College, all those in favor, please raise your hand. Are there any opposed? That's unanimous. Jim, can you move K?
Authorizing one-time supplemental appropriation of $46,504 from contingent fund to TC3 to assist with the implementation of a service management modernization plan, and I would move that.
Is there a second? Seconded by Dave McKenna. Discussion? Short form roll call.
Mr. McKenna?
Yes.
Mr. Klein?
Yes.
Are there any no's? That's unanimous. L?
A budget adjustment and appropriation for 2017 sponsored support to Tompkins-Cortland Community College, and I would move that.
Is there a second? Seconded by Anna. Discussion? Again, short form roll call, please.
Mr. McKenna?
Yes.
Mr. Klein?
Yes.
Are there any no's? That's unanimous. Thank you. Thank you, Carl, for coming and talking to us, and we're glad to do what we can to help.
Well, I just want to express my heartfelt thanks to this body for not only your support here tonight in this somewhat unusual year that we've had, but for many years of support for our community college. And your generosity in supporting that special project, I think, is particularly just over the top in terms of generous, in terms of our need and helping us to kind of bridge this difficult time. And that, too, is much appreciated. I know the staff is very excited about that. So I don't know if I got any words, okay, to kind of express what's in my heart. But anyway, thank you all so much. And coming before this body and getting this kind of warmth and support is one of the things I will miss in retirement. So thank you very much.
We don't have an executive session tonight. Is that correct, John and Joe?
Correct.
We'll be moving to privilege of the floor for the public. We're going to put the screens up first. Privilege of the floor for the public is the opportunity for anyone to come and speak to the legislature on any topic for up to 3 minutes. We ask anyone who wants to speak to please sign one of the blue cards at the back of the room and hand it forward. And if someone wants to do that and hasn't done that, please go ahead. By signing the card, you're agreeing to our rules. You're agreeing to a 3-minute time limit. You're agreeing not to raise your voice. You're agreeing not to use lewd, obscene, profane, slanderous, or libelous language or speak or act in a manner that would tend to incite a breach of peace. You're agreeing not to speak about county personnel matters. Personnel matters include comments about the job performance of named county employees, other than elected officials. After 3 minutes, you agree to leave the microphone and yield the floor. Transferring time to another person is not permitted. You agree that if you cause a disruption and are asked to leave, you will leave the chambers. And as a note, personnel matters should be directed to the relevant department and or supervisor in the case of a department head, or to the county administrator. Except for the county administrator, county attorney, finance director, and clerk of the legislature, which should be directed to the chair of the legislature. We normally have a screen, but it's not working tonight, and so the 3 minutes will be checked by our legislature clerk, Kathy Covert, and she's got her little signs that she can kind of count down the minutes a little bit for you. So there won't be an audible signal at the end, but we will let you know when the time is up. And if the time is up, we ask that you please conclude. First card I have is Eunice Tabor, and then Norbert McCluskey.
Good evening. Eunice Tabor here as Secretary of the Tompkins County Food Distribution Network. As we all know, food is a basic need, and it is through the 15 food pantries in our county and 3 meal sites as member agencies of the Food Bank of the Southern Tier that we serve persons who are in need of food. The food pantries of the Tompkins County Food Distribution Network give out enough food for 3 meals for 3 days, or 9 meals worth of food for each member of a household per visit. The funding we receive is very important to help us serve those in our county who are hungry and food insecure. In Tompkins County, 1 in 7 adults and 1 in 5 children in our community are food insecure. In 2016, we have served about 120,000 persons with 760,000 meals. Clients can visit each pantry once a month, and some visit more than one to take care of their household food needs. At the meal sites, clients can come whenever they are open. Food drives and donations are very helpful in keeping our pantry stocked, but they are not reliable in providing the staple food items we need to give our clients nutritious meals. Grants like the one we have applied for are critical in maintaining the staple food items our clients need on a regular basis. When a young woman comes to our pantry with her intake form indicating she has 3 young children, and the tears begin to roll down her face, it is then that we know how important this food is to her and her family, especially when she says, "Now I won't have to send my children to bed hungry." Or when a father who is working 2 jobs to support his family has to come to the pantry for food because he has to make a choice to pay for housing and or gas to get to work rather than food. It is then that we know how much our pantries and meal sites do to help hungry people in our county. These days, we are deeply concerned for the people we serve, as many of their safety nets, like food stamps, are in jeopardy. If there is a change in the requirements, it will definitely affect our pantries and meal sites. We thank you all for your generous support in the past and hope that you will be able to continue that same level of support as you review the 2018 County City funding grant proposals. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Norbert McCluskey, and then Rich Bennett.
Thank you. Hi, I'm Norbert McCluskey. I'm the Executive Director for the Ithaca Health Alliance. The Ithaca Health Alliance was formed back in 1997 by a community group that was looking for ways to enhance access to health care for community members who did not have access to health care. It started as a co-op. Today, 20 years later, we're celebrating our 20th anniversary this summer. We're still doing that same thing, trying to facilitate access to health care for our community members who, for whatever reason, cannot find access to health care. We do that primarily through the operation of the Ithaca Free Clinic. The Ithaca Free Clinic was founded in 2006. We celebrated our 10th anniversary last summer, and we're halfway through our 11th year of operation. We see about 1,000 community members a year. Prior to the Affordable Care Act, that was closer to 1,700 or 1,800. We're seeing a little bit of an increase this year with some of the activity that's going on at the federal level. we provided about $690,000 worth of services to our community members in need of health care services, and we have a variety of those from health care all the way down to insurance navigation and financial advocacy. With the budget that we have right now, basically that's about $3.50 return for every dollar that the community invests in our operation, and we're very proud to be able to bring those kind of services, those supplies, prescription medications, legal services, financial services, whatever anybody needs that we can provide. All I can say is thank you for your support, because it's critical to what we do at the clinic. You know, our average patient here in the community is a man or a woman who basically is employed. 87% of our patients are employed. 53% are female. They do not have access to health insurance because they earn too much for Medicaid. They don't earn nearly enough to purchase anything in the marketplace. They're just good people stuck in a bad spot, and we're very happy to be able to provide them with the help and the care that they need that they wouldn't get anywhere else if the free clinic did not exist. We do that with the help of about 120 radically committed volunteers, doctors, nurses, nurse practitioners, physician assistants, community members, all working very hard to bring a continuous access to health care to those who are in need. So as you're looking at us this year, please think about what we bring to our community, what we bring to our community members, and know that we're very appreciative of the support that you've all provided in the past, and we hope that we can continue to work together in the future. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Rich Bennett, and then Vonnie Dawson.
Hello. Hello, my name is Rich Bennett. I am the director of the Ithaca Rescue Mission. We work to provide support for those struggling with homelessness and food insecurity. We do that through four main programs. We have a day center known as the Friendship Center that really creates a safe place for those struggling with homelessness to get off the streets. One of the things that we really struggle against is a stigma and stereotype about homeless individuals and what they are and who they are in our community. And yet what we know nationally and locally is that those who are struggling with homelessness are those who are more likely to be the victims of violence and abuse. And the Friendship Center creates a safe place for up to 40 or 50 people per day to get off the streets, get something to eat, take a shower, get some food, do some laundry. We're the mailing address at any given time for 100 to 150 people trying to navigate systems. We have a food pantry that serves about 200 to 250 individuals each month, again, trying to help bridge the gap, usually to kind of get additional meals or supports for the clients we serve, those trying to get through each month and feed their families. We have a shelter that serves 12 individuals in our building, as well over the last year. What we've seen is an increase in demand beyond what we actually have the capacity to need to serve. In the wintertime, we see increases that are pretty standard for our county. Usually this time of year, however, we see our numbers go down. That has not happened so far this year. Our numbers have stayed high. We continue to be full or close to full each night at our shelter, and we have right now 11 hotel rooms that represent almost 28 individuals, including 5 families and 13 children, young children, who are currently homeless in our community, and we don't have the capacity to serve. We can do, and on top of that, finally, we also do 25 units of low-barrier permanent supportive housing that really is trying to move those from homelessness to housed who burn bridges and lack skills and supports they need to stay housed. I can't thank you enough for the support we receive from this body, and that while our job is to be good stewards of those limited resources, I also ask that you keep us in mind as you have to make really hard decisions this year, that the work we do really is trying to be a safety net for those struggling with homelessness and hunger, trying to figure out how to navigate gaps in transportation, employment, skills, and resources so they can take it that step up, that hand up, and support to move forward in this community as members and partners and neighbors of Tompkins County and Ithaca. So thank you for your support, and thanks for letting me speak.
Thank you. Vonnie Dawson, then Crystal Palmer.
Hi,
My name is Vonnie Dawson. Went by Yvonne Bartlett when I worked in the Big Zay building. Way back before it was closed, I was the first one to walk out of there and come to the county board. And today, I have four separate court cases pending in Tompkins County Court, two in Supreme Court and two in Family Court, because of how I was left after leaving that building, that sick building, and how my finances and health were affected because of that sick building. I am fighting for my home and Supreme Court. I just finished replying to the divorce papers I was served about 25 days ago. That also is in Supreme Court. I have two cases in Family Court. And because of my financial situation, my life has been nothing but a struggle since I left that Big Zay building, with court case after court case after court case, and myself as my own attorney most of the time, and I'm not an attorney, representing myself. And it's been very stressful, but I have learned a lot about it, and I've learned a lot about our legal system. I've learned how to read laws and regulations and things like that. And I came here last board meeting to inform you about Article 440, Section 4, how Tompkins County is receiving federal grant money by stealing people's children. And I'm talking about illegally taking children. Then they coerce the parents into signing off on these children instead of going to trial, telling them if they go to trial, they will never see their children again once they lose that trial. So the parents sign off, and CPS adopts those children out, getting even more money. Here's an example, and this is not from our county. These two little boys in this picture are from Poughkeepsie, New York. The youngest one died while in foster care on March 8th of this year. I have been helping his mom, who is struggling with his death. They were illegally taken for the same reason. Tompkins County is leaving themselves wide open to all kinds of liabilities because of what CPS is doing and being allowed to do. My daughter's going to get up and talk a little bit about what's happened to us in the last week or two. And I have tried to contact and been at county personnel to talk to people at county personnel about what's going on inside of the agency to do employee complaints. I was also in the county attorney's office too. Explain the whole thing to him after I received a second file with information that did not belong to me, total confidential information with fax covers from the state police saying that no one was allowed to release that information to anyone, including release it to the person that was named in the complaint. And I have those, but they're not my reports. So I'm going to let my daughter talk about that. But I asked Tompkins County, when you decide who is going to be your new commissioner of social services because the job is open, please, please look at people from the outside, not the people that are already there, because our Department of Social Services is so corrupt. We don't need somebody we already have taken over as commissioner. I beg you, please hire someone from outside. Thank you.
Thank you. Crystal Palmer and Sherry Corthus.
Hi, my name is Crystal Palmer. I'm from Newfield, and I'm going to talk really fast because I got a lot to say. A couple of months ago, I called Tompkins County CPS per school recommendation to see if I could open a preventive case and possibly get 4 hours of respite care a month. I have a son with oppositional and emotional behavioral disorder, along with an IEP at school. I'm on a fixed income and the sole caretaker to three children 24/7. I was told no because I did not have an open case and there was no funding for these type of situations. In the meantime, my mother was filing an indicated report from October 2016, and her FOIA requests were medical records of my children's and mine from previous years, nothing current, along with police reports and investigations that clearly stated dissemination, copying, or distribution of content to any person, including victim or complainant, is strictly prohibited. Well,
I will give you another minute. Just
okay, slow
be
down.
Calm. Be calm.
The full investigations released does not even involve my mom or pertain to her indicated report. I left a voicemail for an official at Social Services on June 8th. I got no call back. On June 13th, I sat in DSS all day waiting to speak to the commissioner. Still no response. To this date, I still have not heard from the commissioner. I called the governor's office, who sent me to Family and Children's, who sent me back to a CPS supervisor. I left the supervisor a voicemail on 6/13 and again on 6/15. I'm still waiting a call back. Records were released for a second time since I expressed my concerns. Now, mind you, during the CPS investigation from October 2016, my CPS worker sent my children's pediatrics office an incomplete, scribbled-on release for information that did not bear my signature. The pediatrics office did not release any information due to the lack of missing information on the form. CPS was not able to obtain my children's medical information in regards to the ongoing investigation in October of 16. If they weren't released, then please tell me what medical records or why medical records from previous years have to do with the current indicated report and released in this FOIL request that was sent to my mother. I was told by multiple workers that the only info released is the info pertinent to the case. The FOIL report did not come from Albany. It was notarized and signed directly by the commissioner herself. Also, how can DSS withhold visitation between a grandmother and her grandchildren that are in foster care, but yet pay the grandmother to do daycare for her other daughter's children? To me, this makes no sense. Recently, my child's father was hotlined. We live in separate households, and she resides with him. I told CPS they did not need to speak to two of my children since they weren't listed on the report, ages 5 and 6, especially my son with the special needs. They threatened to open a case on me if I refused to let them in. Once again, the county can spend time and money on opening cases without allegations of neglect or abuse, but refused to help me when I called them and needed them the most. I've been accepted for the next stage of processing for the New York State Corrections Officer position in Albany. Sorry, on June 26th, I went to family court to find, because I needed information for the investigation unit. When I've been to court, what I've been to court for, and the dates I've been there, they told me that they do not have the funding or the manpower to complete my request. So it was denied, and now I can't. Now I'm going to be disqualified from the position I worked for again. They said I have too many files dating back to 2000. Now my paperwork is incomplete. How are we supposed to get off the system and protect our children and better our lives when funding is going to all the wrong places? I want to know how much is going to foster care and daycare assistance, traditional CPS cases and preventive services, the FAR program, the judicial system, adoptions to the county, assigned counsel, and how much funding is going to fund our heroin facility that we're going to be using. Because I was told that foster care is getting a majority of the money, and the FAR program gets maybe, by a worker I was told, maybe $800 a year to work with. FAR is to keep parents together, families together. FAR is a resource where the report doesn't come indicated or unfounded. It's just a resource. And when CPS opens an investigation, they can choose between the FAR case or the traditional case. The whole point of the foster care, the whole point of CPS is to get the help people need. We have the knowledge now. We have the medical needs that we have now to help people that are in trouble, not to take their kids apart, make them jump through hoop after hoop after hoop just to not have them in the end. We need to take these resources and put them into parents that need help, that ask for help, that can't get it, and then they come in and try to take our kids because we can't do it. That's all I got to say. Sorry.
Thank you very much. I have Sherry Corthus, and I have one after that. Just if there's anyone else that wants to speak, please send up your blue card. The last one after Sherry is Michael Kaplinko-Lair.
Yeah, hi, I'm Sherry Cortice, 502 North Albany, and so sorry to hear that kind of those kind of things happen in our state, and there seems to be no recourse. But in 1971, the Industrial Revenue Agency was created under General Municipal Law 18A. I'm going to pass like a couple copies of this. I think I like three copies for you guys to at least pass around and see what I've been working on. And listening to TC3 and all these great services we have, the Friendship Center, Ithaca Health Alliance, these are just such great programs. But in 1971, when they created this agency, and this IDA in Tompkins County, the purpose and the mission of this law was to create and retain quality jobs so people would have good jobs and could afford housing, and in a way, reparations, because it's 1971. That's how it was supposed to be used. And in my paperwork here, I'm hoping, like in the third line when I talk about how the Tompkins County IDA has to issue bonds because you can't give them tax abatements because, you know, they're tax exempt, so we issue bonds to help them out. So I'm confused as to why we couldn't help TC3 more as we fund Cornell, IC, Cayuga Medical Center, William George Agency, Cayuga Power Plant, and more. The two new projects that I really would like to see stopped before construction starts is the City Center and the Herald Square, and I'm going to keep continuing the HARP because both of these projects are massive apartment complexes from out-of-town developers, and 193 units on that one block, tree block, no market rate rent, no affordable housing, no jobs created. Herald Square is much more of a monstrosity. I know we think it's going to be pretty and nice, but it's not. I want to know what happens to our local businesses when we're tearing up the streets, what happens with the easement on Herald City Center, because there's not going to be a 10-foot, all the grass is going to disappear. That's it, no more grass in the commons. It's all been taken away. But I have, if this program had used properly, I guess that's what upsets me the most, we would not have a lot of the issues we're having today. Children could be with their parents with no hassles. We would have jobs created, and these people wouldn't be going to our jails, local jails and prisons, or the heroin epidemic. People need a purpose in life, and when they don't have a purpose, they will find something else. So just in your human, again, I keep saying, okay, there's reality TV guy show running our country, and things are not the same. I just think we need to step back and not make so many decisions right now and maybe start thinking on a more human level about how we are all human beings. No matter what our class or what our race or anything, we need to start working with one another, because our country is so divisive right now that I see that we are our only hope. So, the people united will never be divided. So thank you very much for your time. I'll see you guys the next time. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Michael Kaplinka-Lair.
Thank you, Mike Kaplinka-Lair from Town of Lansing. I'm here to speak in favor of Resolution P, which is funding for Amici House and the Child Care Center. This particular resolution is very dear to my heart because I was on the OAR board probably about a dozen years ago. That's before the name change from Offender Aid and Restoration to Opportunities, Alternatives, and Resources. But also back in the early 90s, 1990, I was a director of the Learning Web and started a program called the Homeless Youth Outreach Project with a little bit of funding from the United Way. Unfortunately, that has continued to this day because of the need. I think that this is a very important commitment you're making. It will indeed supply 23 units of affordable housing. And I hope this can indeed be unanimous. Thank you.
Thank you. Let's go to privilege of the floor for municipal officials. I saw Dr. Nguyen here. If you'd like to speak to us, Deborah was here. I don't know if there's anyone else. Doc, go ahead.
I'll lead with today the health department shut down the Commons water feature. So hopefully we'll resolve that soon.
Can you speak a little louder?
Yes. Sorry, so it's being a little funny, but it's true that the county health department shut down our commons water feature today, and so hopefully we can resolve this issue soon. I wasn't a fan of that fountain anyway. People talked about Trump austerity today, so we recently passed a resolution opposing the Trump budget and its impact on local services to low-income people. We've changed the site plan review process to factor in tree preservation, plant selection, and planting. And I think I mentioned this last time I was here that we were considering a rule for landlords to display a certificate of compliance at the entrance of rentals, and that is passed and will be required going forward. That's it. So the waterfront planning is also been circulated and will be considered at the next Planning and Economic Development Committee meeting.
questions? Jim Dennis.
Hi, how are you? I'm glad you came over. The landlord issue, did you invite the landlords to speak to the committee before you voted on it?
I believe they were at the Rental Housing Advisory Committee where this came, that resolution came out of. So, yes.
You solicited input from them?
Yes. Well, I didn't personally, but
well,
the members of the committee did, yes.
The committee did? Okay.
Let's see. I think Carol was next.
What's your understanding of the concern about the water fountain?
That the water's recirculated and that kids are jumping in it without all the required infrastructure for showering and other kind of water park amenities.
Can you comment on that, Joe?
I can. I think Duxton has it pretty close, and Jonathan can help me too. That's basically it. It relies on recycled water, so it doesn't filter or treat that water at all. And there's a concern about bacteriological contamination of that water and algae growth and so forth. So I think that's the nature of the problem.
This is an action of our health department.
This is the fountain, yes. This is the health department. It's the fountain in the Commons.
Can I ask one other? So what's the city's policy about bathing in that fountain?
No, you're not supposed to enter that film. So I believe we at the very least want to put a sign up indicating that the water is not potable, and we will, you know, discuss enforcement of commons rules, both the fountain and dogs and many other issues, pretty soon.
Thank you,
Duck. You're very popular. I've got questions all over here. Dooley Kiefer, Peter Stein.
Peter Stein's question is
Mike Sigler, then Martha Robertson. All right, Peter's off. Let's go to Dooley.
At a previous meeting, you reported about the city's consideration of collapsing all its advisory groups into a handful. Could you update us on that, please?
Yes, I'm sorry, I left that out too. So tomorrow at City Administration, we're considering the latest revision of restructuring the committees and boards that advise us. And so really, some of the biggest questions we have left for the working group that's creating that is, what do the applications look like, and how do we select the people who aren't just on the commission, but the subject matter experts that are supposed to advise the commissioners on specific issues. For example, Shade Tree Advisory Committee is concerned that their work won't be as valued in the new commission structure, and so we need to make sure that we weigh that against the other problems that the new structure is supposed to address, such as being unable to find qualified candidates, getting quorum at meetings, having staff support, the amount of time that county council liaisons spend at committees. So there are a lot of issues to balance with those concerns.
I appreciate the problems with staffing committees and making sure they have members and who attend. But some of your committees, I'm thinking of the Conservation Advisory Council, our county EMC values their work a lot, and we interact with them. So when you have a functioning committee like that that helps the community broadly, it would be a shame to lose something like that, and I hope that something like that won't be lost sight of. I had one other question. The dredging of the inlet, is there an update on that?
There is. Thank you for bringing that up, too. Hold on a second. So the DEC is still designing the sediment basin and seeking permits. Construction of the dewatering facility should happen in 2018, taking up about one-third of Southwest Park. That's the area behind Walmart. Dredging won't begin until 2019, unfortunately. There is, however, another $2 million set aside for dredging Cascadel Creek, which should happen next year.
And where would those dredge spoils go?
There's talk of using those spoils to build a berm between the Cayuga Waterfront Trail and the wastewater treatment plant.
Thank you.
Mike Sigler. Martha Robertson.
Thanks, Mike. Hi, Doug. I was talking to Frank Krupa today, our health commissioner, and about the fountain. He mentioned that it's kind of cut and dried. As soon as he found out, or as the department found out, that it was recycled water that required them to step in and shut it down. I guess, so I don't know if the remedy is that it not be recycled, that it just be a constant new flow, but he had other safety concerns about it as well. So.
No, it makes sense. I was being semi-facetious about even making it a concern. It's a serious concern, and we certainly don't advocate that. You're not supposed to jump in it, unfortunately. It's also unfortunate that it's inviting in that way.
Oh, it sure looks like it's supposed to be jumped into. And I got to say, as you know, a mother, like those sharp edges, you know, maybe make me nervous. But so it wasn't a discretionary matter on Frank's part. It really had to, he had to follow the rules. Thanks.
That makes sense. Thanks.
Yes, Mike.
Is there any plans to use, like, maybe the Rangers that were using the gorges to patrol that body of water? Wondering if we're going to be on the hook for more money.
That's a whole other thing. yeah.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks.
Appreciate it. Before we go to privilege of the floor for the legislators, I will remind you of our goal of 3 minutes. Haven't been too successful recently. As you know, I've cajoled. That hasn't worked too much. I've been patient, and the gavel hasn't worked too much. My 14-year-old niece from Florida has watched me on the broadcast and understood my dilemma. So she recently visited Harry Potter World and brought me something that I'm going to solve the problem with. And she's brought me what is known as the Elder Wand, which, as J.K. Rowling tells us, is the most powerful wand in the world. And I know that it's powerful because on the box it says, "This is not a toy." Now, I know the spell, and if anyone doesn't be careful about their comments, I intend to use it, and you may find yourself expanding like a balloon with hot air. You may find yourself on the ceiling, and you may find yourself floating out the door. So, fair warning, the Elder Wand.
You just became my favorite legislator.
Who would like to speak?
You mean who dares?
Peter Stein.
Don't start counting yet, okay? You scared me off. But,
you have to use the microphone.
I'm sorry. Yeah. You scared me off, but I'm going to chance it anyway. It's hard for me to stick to 3 minutes, but please don't stop me halfway through. So I hope you'll
feel yourself expanding. You'll know it's time.
Yeah, okay. So I just wanted to explain why I said what I did when you called on people to signify that they were here, okay? The language was German. The translation, it was spoken 500 years ago, plus or minus a few centuries, by Martin Luther, standing at the Cathedral of Reims, where he had banged up 87 things that he believed in. And a translation into, and by the way, the language he spoke at the time was not German. The language he spoke at the time was Latin. That's how he made the speech. He was a preacher of that, he was the minister of that particular church, and he had studied, as ministers do, they all spoke Latin, and he had studied the Bible again and again and again, and he had come to the conclusion that what the church hierarchy was saying was fundamentally at odds at what he understood Jesus was saying when that Jesus was saying in the speeches that he made. And so what he did was, and he was appalled at the way the administration there, this has some connection with modern time, he was appalled the way the administration was changing the content of what he thought was the essential message of Jesus. And the thing that particularly bothered him was that the hierarchy then had decided that if, those of you who know the Bible, you know that Jesus says you can't, if you want to go to heaven, you can't commit sin. But these people said, actually, if you gave a certain number of dollars to the church, you could forget the sin. That enraged him. And so what he did is he wrote these 83, whatever it is, speeches in Latin, where he made his where he made his case. The meaning of it was the following. This is what I believe. I've thought about it a lot, and I can't come to any other conclusion. And he understood at the time that making that speech publicly, he may well be killed for. Because people that had said few less than that had been put to death and burned to death at what they did at the time. And I don't know of anything that inspired me more than that particular statement. The statement that I often think of in my own life, that you ought to think things through, and if you believe something, even if everybody else in the room says you're wrong, you consider what they say, but you come to your own conclusion. So I'm always amazed at Martin Luther King. But the part I like the best is that having done that, actually they didn't print him on file, but he kept going through this thing, and he spent the next 20 years of his life. Let me tell you about this. He spent the next 20 years of his life fixing up what was German at that particular time, which was the language of poor people, of farmers. Get the store, sit on the bench, go to bed. I mean, that was what you said in German at that time. But he decided that Latin was a much more elegant and beautiful language than German was in its poetry and its so on and so forth. So he spent the next 20 years of his life translating Latin into changing German so that it could, in fact, you could say the same things in German that you said now only in Latin. And the reason was a deep belief he had that when Jesus spoke, he wasn't speaking to the church. He was speaking to individuals. And he wanted those individuals to be able to read it. So that's always made a big impression on me. So I'm sorry if I took too much.
Thank you. Rich John?
Thank you, Mike. And start the clock. I'm going to try to get this done in under 3 minutes. And if not, I'll try to buy an indulgence. I think that was the...
You just wasted 10 seconds.
I did, but I'm going to start out with two shout-outs and a comment. First shout-out, in case he's home watching, I'd like to congratulate my son, Nick, who's graduating Ithaca High School this Thursday. And I pass it on to the whole crop of high school graduates in our county. We were really fortunate in the schools that we have, and certainly... My son attended Ithaca High School, and the faculty and staff there are just first rate. And they've done a great job for all three of my kids, but congratulations, Nick. My second shout-out is Saturday was the Gorges Half Marathon was run here in starting out in, I think it was in the town of Ulysses. It starts out there, you run along the road a little bit and get on the Black Diamond Trail. You come into town, and you run through Cass Park and get on the Waterfront Trail, around through the farmer's market and through Stewart Park and end on the Commons. And I would say I'm certainly old and slow. Surprisingly, I did not win, but I got to the finish line, and I was thinking about that was one of the most beautiful race courses you could imagine running on. And we take for granted just how stunning our community is. It was a great showcase, and I think that race is just going to become more and more of a tradition. There were between 600 and 700 people that ran it this year, and those numbers are going to go up. So then my comment is, while we're thinking locally about certain election races that are coming up, the Constitutional Convention question is going to be on, and I just wanted to mention that will be on the ballot in November. We should be paying attention to that. The New York State Legislature is finishing its session. They have a few more days. They've done essentially nothing on ethics yet again. This year they've had major scandals with the economic initiatives in Buffalo that are unfortunate. I think there's 7 or 8 people under indictment as a result of that. And it's not surprising. This just goes on and on. There are risks in a constitutional convention. We certainly have things that are right about the state that we'd want to protect. But we have to think long and hard that this is a risk I believe worth taking to make our state better. I do not see we're going to get change in Albany otherwise. Thank you.
Anyone else? Will?
Thank you, Mike. Today is World Refugee Day. I was unaware of that until I was invited to a breakfast gathering. I think most of us got this invitation. I actually went, and it was put together by Catholic Charities, pulling together people locally from faith groups and just local individuals that are trying to raise awareness about the situation of refugees and build support locally for people who make it here. Such gatherings were happening around the country. According to CNN, we are currently in the midst of literally one of the worst refugee crises in history. It is just the number of people who have been displaced, two-thirds of whom don't leave their own home. They've just been forced out of the communities where they live and are living frequently in camps within their own countries. But many, many others are risking lives to come to other countries and desperately needing support. And as you're probably aware, here in Ithaca, the Catholic Charities has been trying to gear up to set in place a system that can welcome people and give support. The number of actually you've actually made it through their system is actually only 3. But there have been folks coming in through other means. They did put a call out for anybody that would like to join in the effort. They have been for some time collecting furniture and storing furniture because refugees that come here have nothing and frequently just need things like a dresser, a desk, and chairs. And unfortunately, the space where they have been storing this is soon becoming available. So if anybody happens to know of a storage space, let me know, and I will try to convey that to them. The main speaker of the program was Duxon, who once again talked about his family's experience of coming from Vietnam and what an incredible experience adjusting to our country was, but how appreciative he was, and how it's quite possible for people to assimilate and become the Duxon we know in a relatively short time when his parents, his father spoke English, his mom did not. They both came from Vietnam when he was shortly after at the end of the war. At any rate, World Refugee Day, it seems far away, but even here in Ithaca, we can be doing something. Thank you.
So I'm going to try and go quick through two, but I actually developed an impervious charm that I keep in my back pocket, so I think I'm immune. The first one is actually I was very sad to miss the breakfast this morning. I was having a meeting about the Trumansburg INHS development, and I just wanted to talk to everyone here about it. I grew up in Trumansburg. It is very near and dear to my heart, as many of you know. And there's a lot, I think, of misinformation, a lot of fear related to it, and I just wanted to dispel some of it, which is that this is not a purely affordable housing, low-income housing that people should be afraid of. This is a project that will bring diversity of housing, will bring mixed income, will allow for not the destruction of an environment, but ensuring that it is a retention of people. There are people in the elder population that have difficult times staying in housing and fixed income. There are young professionals with young children who are finding it difficult to find housing. They will qualify for the affordable housing in these units, but there is a very wide range of the units that will be there, and some of them are homeowner options as well, it seems like. It will be close to the downtown area, so it can encourage what we are looking for in the county comprehensive plan with respect to walkability, the affordable housing, preservation of spaces because it's protecting sprawl. So there are many, many things that I think we need to support with respect to this development, and I'm urging all of the legislators to educate themselves on what's happening and help people in the community understand what this development would be. So that was one of the things that I wanted to bring up. And another thing that I wanted to bring up, and I brought it up in HHS, is with respect to something I'm now learning about the senior population and something they experience and happened very recently, and you've heard it, and I'm hoping that this case will continue, obviously, is the two women who lived together and experienced people, a company coming to their home and doing work on their house that they didn't ask for and then having that and demanding pay for that. I wanted to thank Lisa Holmes. She has put two links on the website of the Office of the Aging so that people can track some of the businesses. The Better Business Bureau and the state are both keeping lists. But I also wanted to acknowledge that they have a significant amount of training and education through the office that maybe a lot of people don't know about. So I want to encourage people to educate themselves on those services so that we can help our senior population. And the third thing, very quickly, as many of you know, we did have a rally come to the HHS committee. I wanted to do it now so that everybody could hear about it. And that is for the living wage for the county. And I did have saved on my computer an email that I wrote that I'm just going to read so that it will be a quick, less than 3-minute cap. Someone asked me what I thought about it, and this was my response. It's easier to read. Last year, the legislature passed a resolution urging the state to pass legislation creating a $15 minimum wage statewide. The state actually did this, though the transition will be a phase-in, and this transition is slower upstate than it is in, say, New York City. I think people really do need to understand that that is happening at a state level. It's important to note that the Alternative Federal Credit Union will be updating their living wage estimates this year, so we need to let them go through that process to get a sense of what a living wage actually will be moving forward. A living wage is not a complicated concept. It is simply what people need to live. How we get there is a bit more complicated, but that doesn't mean we shouldn't try. What is the most important, however, is that this issue does not become polarizing between businesses and the community. We all need each other to thrive. There are many small businesses that will be affected, so the question for the community, and in particular for those of us who can afford it, is how committed are we to shop local? A living wage campaign must be coordinated with a buy local campaign for starters. We should also support the development of training programs on how to transition to a living wage employer. I think that we need to provide as much support as possible. I'd like to see business owners and the community come together in honest conversation so that both sides can understand the pressures that each side faces and we can creatively work towards a sustainable economy for everyone, which includes a wage that supports basic living needs. So I'm urging the entire community to come together and understand these pressures so that we can overcome them. Just because something's difficult doesn't mean that we shouldn't consider doing it. So that was just my last little plug.
Jim Dennis.
I want to repeat something that Brian Robinson used to say about this time of year. And Rich spoke to his son graduating. There are graduations happening all over Tompkins County within the next 7 days. And one of the concerns that Brian had, and he would always bring it to our attention, was the fact that people party, they drink, they drive, or both together, and sometimes there are bad consequences. We can all remember at least one of those if you've lived here for a very long time. So I would hope that parents, teachers, people involved with high schools remind children about what this means for them. This is a step to a better place. You leave your high school, you go on to something hopefully better, and don't interrupt it with one mistake that can change your life forever. So I hope they take heed.
Martha Roberts.
Thank you. Anna brought up one of the issues I wanted to mention, the Ithaca Neighborhood Housing Services Project, mixed and affordable housing in Trumansburg. The planning board meets. We'll be looking at the formal proposal on July 20th at 7 o'clock. I'm glad that we have a lot of folks who come to our meetings and express the desire for support for affordable housing. I hope they will journey to Trumansburg July 20th at 7. Unfortunately, I have a Dryden Town Board meeting the same night, so I won't be able to get there, but I'll send a letter. We pride ourselves on our public process. I would contrast that to the Republican-led U.S. Senate, which actually is mirroring the Republican-led House of Representatives. The number of public hearings, public information sessions that the two houses have had on the bill that affects a sixth of our economy, zero. They would pass your wand test with flying colors because they don't talk about it at all in public. So I hope people will call. There are a few senators who might be willing to stand up and say this is not democracy. It's not the way we should be running our economy or something as deeply personal and important as individuals' health care. People perhaps like Murkowski in Alaska and Collins in Maine, because I think, you know, we don't live in those states, but we're going to be affected by their votes. So I think we all have the right to call any of these senators, including McConnell, although that's probably a lost cause. But I really think it would only take three senators to say this isn't right. I mean, they attacked Obama, they attacked the Democrats for so-called rushing through the Affordable Care Act after 14 months of committee hearings and debates and public meetings and 300 amendments, including 100 Republican amendments that they simply incorporated into the bill. There's no comparison. On a brighter note, we had a great event this morning at the Solid Waste, what do we call it now, Recycling and Materials Management Center, where Matt Marco, the DEC Region 7 Director, Regional Director, came and presented Tompkins County and the Town of Ithaca with the Climate Smart Communities Award, the 12th. We are the 12th community, and the Town of Ithaca is the 14th in New York State to get this recognition. And it's a testament to the work of the Planning and Sustainability Department and the I'll just call it Solid Waste, Materials Management, Barb Ekstrom's department. We've recently gotten a $25,000 grant for 5 electric vehicles, plug-in hybrids for the mental health department, and $355,000 to transform the one of our buildings to be able to accept the solid food scraps program, which is really growing by leaps and bounds. So it's great to get that kind of recognition, and so we appreciate Mr. Marco and the others from the region coming to Tompkins County for that award. And thanks to Marsha Lynch for setting up a really nice event.
Carol Chalk.
Well, I'm going to have to fly away in my broomstick at some point to escape the charms that circulate on the body. I just wanted to just add a little bit of an addendum to the reference to the INHS project in Trumansburg. I want to recognize a woman-owned business that purchased that land and had the vision to want to develop it, and that's Claudia Brenner. And I don't know the name of her business, but it is a business owned by her. Well, thank you, Claudia. And make the connection between the challenges that she faced in thinking about developing that land to something that we've been talking about at Government Operations Committee, which is, I think it was Government Operations, which had to do with the difficulty of coming up with the money to put in the infrastructure for property you're trying to develop to achieve greater units when that all has to be put in before you're going to realize any income from the property. To give you a sense of the size of this site, it's 19 acres, I believe, and for comparison, the entire Hancock Street site, which is a whole, you know, city of Ithaca block, is over, a little bit over 2 acres, I believe. So it's a sizable site, and the requirements of the town are such that you need to put in the infrastructure and requirements of just doing a project. You got, in order for people to get to even the first house you were to build there needs to be a road into it, and there need to be utilities, and there needs to be other kinds of infrastructure. So that is something that we've talked about at Government Operations, sort of how, what are the ways, and sort of as part of the housing strategy we should have in our consciousness, what are the ways that we might, as a county, in addition to what our towns might be able to do, what can we do as a county to try to assist? But it's, you know, you still have to come up with the money in advance. So it's a big challenge, and it's something that in the coming years we'll work more on.
Thank you, Carol. Anyone want a first chance? And Anna wants to have a second chance. Anna, go ahead.
I did three strikes. I just wanted to add the information that there is actually another community meeting. It's an INHS community meeting that will be on the 13th of July from 4 to 7 and in Trumansburg as well, because, and this is the most important thing, INHS and Claudia Brenner have made the commitment to bring this to the community in concept form before they've finalized, and they're going through that rigorous process of trying to get buy-in. I think that there are a lot of people that feel that it is a done deal and they've already figured everything out and they're not getting buy-in, but it's in concept phase, and I want to thank them for doing that. So that is an INHS community meeting, and that is on the 13th from 4 to 7, so hopefully everybody will show up to get a sense of what that is and the housing they'll develop for everyone.
Thank you. And I didn't have to use it. For the chair's report, just a couple of things. Cortland County isn't always bad. In the realm of shared services, we were invited over to Cortland last week, to talk about and tell them about what we do as a shared service for our assigned counsel program. I went along with Rich John, chair of the Public Safety Committee, our county administrator, Joe Mariana, and Lance and Julia from the assigned counsel program. And we met with the chair of their legislature, with their county attorney, with one of their other legislators, and the administrator of their conflict attorney assigned counsel office and just began to open a discussion. As we know, we've been working with a memorandum of understanding with Schuyler County, and there are Cortland has a number of changes going on over there. They're seriously looking at their public defender office, whether they want to continue that, and whether they want to look at trying to obtain other services. I don't know if that's going to go any further or not. We'll probably have another meeting, but it shows an effort to try to look at the possibility of working together. Richard, do you want to add anything about that?
No, it was the first discussion, but it was a good one. And, you know, this is what seems to be the governor's idea, is that we should be working together. And it was a good discussion. I hope it continues.
The other thing I wanted to comment on was the Bicentennial Commission. We had another reading of the nine towns in the city, which we did before this legislature back in April. This was at the beginning of the History Center's annual meeting, and it was very nice. This was last night. I wanted to say that one of their trustees, Robert Baxter, who has been the CEO of Dryden Mutual Insurance Company, and who has over the years been a tremendous supporter of the History Center, made a special effort to take me aside afterwards and say how thrilled they are about the action this legislature took to purchase the Tompkins Trust Company building, and that he couldn't think of a more perfect union of things all coming together at the same time, and that it was a good thing for the county. It made sense for the community. It was great for the History Center, and that everything that for a single project to have all the working factors, in his view, was pretty amazing. Coming from this man who I know has been a terrific CEO of that organization, that private organization in Dryden, I think that was a very nice compliment. The town of Ithaca dedicated their historic plaque for the bicentennial, and we also had our bicentennial presence in the Dryden Dairy Day Parade with the giant cake and many county employees that came, and that was a big success as well. I have one appointment tonight, and that is to the Ethics Advisory Board. I'm appointing Dooley Kiefer as the chair of that board. Let's move to reports. County Administrator Joe Mariana.
Thanks, Mike. I think I've confessed to many of you over the last, I don't know, several days that I can feel myself becoming crankier as I get older. I've attributed that to age. Some of you have seen it probably at a closer hand than others. But in looking at my notes for my report tonight, I realize it's not my age, it's the state of New York that's putting me in that frame of mind. So I'm going to blame the state for that. Principally, what's happening right now with the sales tax extender. Now, I haven't seen the news today, so I don't know if this was overturned or not. But I think all of you now know that that we are being held hostage to an issue that's being dealt with in New York State that relates to the control of the New York City schools, something that we have no involvement in, certainly no control in. Yet the request of virtually every county in New York State to do what is done every 2 years, and nonsensically, I think, that we have to go through it, but to renew that 1% added sales tax that's been in place for many, many years, that request for that 1% to be renewed has been withheld. And it looks like the session may end without it being approved, which puts us in a pretty odd situation. On the one hand, I think all of us are grown-ups, and we know that this will end up okay. I mean, I can't believe that the state will allow, I think it's in excess of $1 billion of revenue that flows to local governments to lapse. I can't believe that's going to happen. At the same time, as we sit, it is happening. So our ability to levy that extra 1% as of December 1st of this year will lapse if something doesn't happen in Albany over the next few days. If that occurs, we stand to lose about $1 million in the month of December alone. So that affects this budget year, this fiscal year. And then if it doesn't get fixed for the next year, call it $11 million or so that we wouldn't have. And then add on top of that money that would otherwise flow to the city and the towns and the villages for their share of that 1%. So it's serious stuff. Again, I think it'll get resolved, but we have to start thinking about the what-ifs. So what if it's not? What should we do for this year? So we are looking at our numbers this year to see how we're doing. I think we're doing okay this year. But can we get through this year if we don't get the $1 million? That's certainly something that we have to think long and hard about, and whether we should be taking any kind of an action now to be able to offset the potential loss of $1 million. More than that, how do we set up this 2018 budget? Should we assume that the money's in or the money's not in? And I think I know which way that might go. I think it'll happen. But at the same time, if we don't have the authority to levy a tax, should we put it in our budget? So it has put us in a very difficult spot. Misery, I guess, loves company, and we're not alone in this. It's every county in New York State, virtually, because we almost all have the 4%. But that's the box that we're in right now. So stand by, and again, they could come back in special session to resolve it. Kathy reminded me before this meeting that there are some technical things, too, that we need to keep our eye on. If there's going to be a change in the tax that affects December, there has to be a 90-day notice of that change. And so that means something needs to happen at the state level in September sometime. So there's a lot of things we have to keep our eye on because of this nonsensical situation that we've been put in Albany. The other thing that we're continuing to do, and I report every 2 weeks on this, to accommodate the latest mandate is the shared services work that we're doing. It's going okay. The panel's met twice now. We're going to meet again tomorrow night. In fact, there's a public hearing tomorrow night. So if you're interested to see what may come out of that process, the public hearing is scheduled at 5:30 tomorrow night. It's an open invitation to people. So we didn't say this is what the plan is going to be because we don't have a plan yet. We simply said if you have ideas and you'd like to bring them to the attention of this group, tomorrow night's a good place for that to start. So, again, that's at 5:30, and then the panel will meet after that to keep talking about what might be in the plan. I indicated last time we talked that I don't expect large things to come of this. I expect a collection of smaller things, and we'll start to articulate those as early as tomorrow night. I think one could be training. One could be some of the things that Maureen Reynolds is doing with the laser fiche process. One could be a mass notification system that we've worked on with the city that we may do countywide as a shared service. So those kinds of small incremental items are likely to be in the plan, but I'll have more to report the next time you get together. So that's my report.
Joe, on sales tax extender, if we had to make that up on the real property levy, I believe it's for $1 million, it's over 2%, isn't it, that we would have to raise?
Yep,
and if
it
you
is.
Talk about $11 million next year, imagine what your real property tax rate would be.
I think it's 23%.
23%.
Or if people say you shouldn't raise taxes, you should cut. We would have to cut something like a quarter of all of our discretionary spending to be able to meet that.
That would put us over the cap, wouldn't it?
A little bit.
Slightly. Martha Robertson.
How about in terms of FTEs, $11 million approximately?
$11 million. 150 employees maybe. Salary and fringe. I'm thinking if it's $100,000 per employee, it's not. It's less than that. But $100,000 per employee, that's 110. That'd be 110.
So that's like...
And
half
it's less
PSS
than that, so call
or
it
all of health or something like that.
Yeah.
Okay.
But, I'm sorry, Mark.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, Joe, you made the point that this is silly that they make us do this every 2 years. But I think this is exactly the reason that they do so that they can use it in these, this Albany gamesmanship plane and leave us as the pawns to be suffering from this kind of nonsense.
I think you've hit it on the head. I agree.
Jim?
Yeah.
I wasn't finished.
It's leverage. Sorry.
Martha wasn't finished. Excuse me. I interrupted her.
Okay.
So the I hadn't thought about the 90 days. That's like, oh, crap. So, because they are saying, well, they can always come back, you know, in a session in the fall. Mm-hmm. Well, like, there's a real deadline there. So, is NYSEC going to do anything? I mean,
yeah.
You know, well, Steve Aquario go on Liz Benjamin, that's
yeah, just saw him. I just saw him two or three nights ago.
I mean, really?
Doing that. And they're trying to rally. I mean, I think everybody knows. Mike did send a letter to half of Albany a couple of days ago to let them know our opinion on it. I believe other counties are doing the same thing. So I think NYSEC is...
I think we have to show up. I think there has to be a presence, a rally, a press conference with 150 people. I mean, really, I don't think sending a letter, as great as that letter was, if they get 62 letters, you know, so what? I think we have to make some actual noise. I really do.
Jim.
I was going to say during my report much of what Joe already said, but I think what we all have to be thinking about as legislators as the budget process moves forward through the summer and then into the fall, if they don't make that move, what you all have to get your paper and pencil out and decide what non-essential programs we have to look at. And we obviously were mandated to do several things. There are some other things that we do that we're not mandated to do. So, you know, I hate to think about it, but you have to think about it because the game is a very tough game that they're playing. And Martha, you mentioned NYSEC. It's a bunch of county legislators sitting around saying the same thing we are in a lot of respects. And I agree. And I think Aquario and his people are doing what they can do. But when you're in a fist fight over who's controlling New York City public education and whatever else is going on, boy, we're a long way from the battle on that one. So,
Julie, then Will.
Joe, what is the penalty if we don't give the 90 days notice?
I don't know. Kathy and I were talking, and the state, it's a state rule, so the state could conceivably waive its own rule. But
correct, yes. There's a waiver process. There is a waiver process.
I think it's very likely that they will act on this before the authority expires in November. So,
that's my.
But it means you're going to have to prepare two budgets for us.
I'm not sure how to approach it. I agree with you. I think they will resolve their differences and they'll release the hostages and we'll get our money. But there is that sometimes when you play a game of chicken, it doesn't end well, and we have to kind of do a little contingency planning for that. I don't know if that means creating two budgets. I'm not quite sure yet.
I guess that would be my suggestion.
Yeah. Okay.
Will?
So I've been trying to understand this. According to news reports, this is basically a conflict between the Assembly and the Senate, and it is essentially the Assembly Democrats that are using this lever. Have we talked with our local representative across the street, and do we have any insight into thinking?
I spoke with a staff person this morning at the press conference that we had, and the staff person said we were not happy about this. And the response was, the fight isn't over yet. So you can take that how you want. And it was a staff person. But I do want to let you know that I did raise it this morning. Barbara was not at that meeting. Or at
that
conference, excuse me. Go back to Martha.
Yeah, just about shared services. We've raised the issue of countywide code enforcement. And I hope that's on the list. It's actually in the draft housing strategy that I'll talk about later. And, you know, as something that I don't know if the time that it takes to put that in place would fit with the shared services calendar. But
here's the way it's shaping up. I think there will be some things. There are the little low hanging fruit that I talked about earlier, and we'll do those. But then we will acknowledge in the report that we have found other things that are worth looking at further. And I think that will be on the short list of things that will take more time to look at.
Thank you.
I'm sorry, was there another hand? Or are we done?
Yeah, I had
I'm
my
sorry,
hand
Carol,
up, but
go ahead.
I'll pass.
Okay. All right, thank you, Joe.
Thanks.
Let's go to Jonathan Wood, our county attorney.
I do not have a report.
Questions for Jonathan? Okay, thank you, John. Let's go to Rick
Mike,
Snyder.
Mike.
Oh, Will does have a question.
So once again, we had in members of the public comments questions about a very detailed case that I totally don't understand. Can you tell us what your office is doing to respond to the concerns that have been raised?
Well, I've spoken with the Department of Social Services. I've spoken with the individual who spoke here. You know, I can't discuss the case. I'm familiar with the case, and I'm not really sure how I can. I'm not really sure how to comment on it, to be honest. I'm familiar with it. It is confidential. You know, I mean, one of the things that's interesting about the whole dynamic is if you're involved in a DSS case, you can go and talk about it all you want, but the department can't do that. They're prohibited by law. So it creates a sort of uneven, you know, at least in terms of the public, an uneven access, basically, to the public.
Well, once again, in general, there's been an assertion that there's sort of a systematic dynamic in play that our department has been doing, and you know, I don't know if that is true, but relating to the payments for foster care, and
I can discuss it in detail, but I think like the general view of the Department of Social Services is that if they're making money on this, they'd sure like to know how.
Okay.
I guess, you know, to sum it up, you know, to that point, you know, I, to be honest, I'm not sure, and they're not really sure what they're talking about, but we are not making money on that, I assure you.
Thank you, Chava.
And so it's unclear, you know, what why they believe that.
Thank you.
Yes, Julie.
Jonathan, I think I've neglected to ask this before. Did everyone's financial disclosure form get turned in finally?
I have to ask Kathy because I haven't yet gotten email
yes.
yet.
Yes, I have received them all.
That's why I didn't get, because normally I get the email of those that haven't, and I bug them, and I've got no email, but that's because there's nobody to bug.
Thank you all.
Yes, Peter.
You know, I have heard many, many of these agonizing stories that bring tears to my eyes every time I hear one. And I heard the same thing that Jonathan says every time when we ask him, what about it? And I think to myself, well, do these people have any person to go to? I mean, is there anything like an ombudsman that can take a neutral position and give an opinion? Or is it just always no? This is the end of it. They make the decision.
What there generally is, and maybe is their opportunity to challenge and have what they call a fair hearing, which means basically somebody comes from Albany and hears their complaint that the department made a wrong determination as to whether a case should be founded, whether they should be denied food stamps or some other benefit. So basically their recourse is within the social services realm to get a fair hearing on the on their issues, and not, you know, by this legislature. It basically goes in a different direction.
But there is a some kind of a process where somebody independent looks into these claims?
Oh, yeah, absolutely, yes.
Well, that's good to hear. I think you ought to tell us a little bit more. I would have liked to have heard that, knew that there was something. Okay, that's...
There is, yes.
Okay.
Thank you, John. Let's go to our finance director, Rick Snyder.
Thank you, Mike. I have two short items tonight. The first one is a handout I passed out to you before the meeting, and it details for finance report dated today, the sale of bands or bond anticipation notes dated today. And I just brought this to your attention because we have been in the market for some time. We floated bonds and bands in February, and we had bands coming due on July 7th of this year. So for the last 4 or 5 weeks, we've been putting together an extension of the bands that came due this July 7th, and we extended them out 7 months to February of 2018. That particular time was chosen because that's the next time that we'll be going out to the bond market. So this was simply an extension of existing bands, and we paid off one small component of that band that was for Pine Hill Road. But today's band, as it sold on the market, again, this was just a seven-month band, was priced at 1.339%. It was bought by Jefferies LLC. There were four bidders, and they were very competitive. I have the bids here in front of me. They're all within just a few basis points of one another. Most of them were 1.33, 1.34, 1.35. So our financial advisor had said, and I wrote a quote, what she had sent me, because Joe always asked me, well, how well did we do in the market compared to everybody else? There wasn't, I don't have a list of what other counties were floating bands this week or in the two-week period, but she said the first three bids listed on the sale results were all within a couple of basis points of each other, indicating that this sale was successfully competitive. Additionally, the net interest rate for the county was within the range of rates we have been seeing within this past week. So if you compare that to the comparison I have listed at the bottom of the sheet, you can see since 2013, where we did at 0.358%, it's consistently gone up as the interest rate curve has been getting higher and higher over the last couple of years to where we got to today. I might mention that in February when we floated bands, we had two different band issues, and they were actually a little bit higher than the current rate that we achieved today. So this is not the highest rate we paid at 1.339%, but it's the second highest that we've paid.
Was there another thing that you wanted to speak about before?
Yeah, there's one other item.
Else, so I have another question.
Go ahead, Peter.
Is the action of the, what is it, all those people that meet and decide what the interest rate
the
is?
The Federal Reserve Board?
Yeah. Is that going to make, should we look at bigger rates because of that?
Remarkably, the Federal Reserve rates haven't really impacted the markets that much. The stock market has been going up, as you've noted, a lot. And as the stock market improves and keeps doing better and better, that seems to drive the prices of bonds down, and that drives the yields up. And that's why you see the yields moving up slowly over a protracted period of time. But actually, with the two Federal Reserve interest rate hikes, it really hasn't had much of an impact on the markets at all, at least not yet. So we pretty much timed the market at a pretty good time. I would imagine that if interest rates do rise at all this year, they rise in the latter part of the year. And so we probably hit it pretty good. Now, as it's February next year, I can't predict that, but who knows. But
and I won't be here to learn.
Anna Kellis.
Just so I understand, you said as the stock market goes up,
go
can
ahead.
You hear me?
I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Anna.
Just super quick so that I understand.
Go ahead.
Numbers and dollars are not my
greatest strength. Stock market goes up, bond rates go down, and returns go up. Is that what you said?
Yeah, as the stock market goes up, and we're at record highs right now, I think yesterday or 2 days ago set another record. As the stock market goes up, it drives the price of bonds, like treasury bonds and all different types of bonds, it drives those prices down. And as those prices go down, the yields on those same bonds tend to go up slowly over time because there's an inverse relationship between the price of bonds and the interest rate of bonds.
Sorry, Rich, I skipped over you.
That's okay. I just was wondering if you had a rate you were using for planning purposes on this band.
Yes, Joe, you want to? It's 2%.
Yeah. So when we prepare the budget, we assume 2% for bands, 4% for bonds.
Okay.
Now, my second item, I don't have a report in writing to share with you, but we did have our auction last night, so I thought I'd give you just the highlights. As you know, we started with around 25 properties, and then I think the last time I reported to the Government Operations Committee, we were down to maybe 11 properties or 12. And last night, we were down to just 8 properties that sold. That's all that was left on the list after all the redemptions. And the total gross proceeds that we brought in the door last night, and they all did sell, even the two that were marked with deed restrictions by the Government Operations Committee, because sometimes, you know, people don't want to bid on those properties. But there were two very small vacant properties that we have written deed restrictions in there for conservation purposes. They did sell. And out of the total proceeds that came out, the gross amount that came in, which include the current taxes that they have to pay, was $155,000. So that was very, very good for the 8 properties on the block last night. After paying the auctioneer fees and the taxes that were owed and all the total expenses, we ended up netting afterwards $88,000. So our net proceeds to the county's good was $88,000. In comparison, if you want to know what we've done in other years, last year we did about $98,000. So we were just about $10,000 shy of what our net was last year. Now, I will be bringing a more comprehensive full report to the next Government Operations Committee on July 5th. And the resolution that the legislature has to pass that says, yes, we've sold these properties, we will be coming to you at the July 6th meeting.
John, did you want to make a point?
I did want to add one thing to that report. The two properties that I had asked be withheld from the auction to GEO, both of those were redeemed. So we're not going to have any further proceedings, thank goodness, with regard to those.
Carol?
Do you have any sense of how many of those and of what value sold to local the people within the county versus absentee landlords or out of far-flung developers?
No, I don't. I mean, we just had the sale last night. I could perhaps get the names of the buyers of those who bought. I know when they raised the hands on who was here for a first-time auction, almost everybody there was a first-time person. A lot of the auctions in the past, we have repeat buyers that come back year after year after year. But I was surprised to see that about 90% of the people that showed at the auction, it was either their first auction or their first Tompkins County auction. We don't usually divulge or share the names publicly, of course, the buyers of the property. I haven't even looked at the buyer's name. There's a couple of clerks at the auction. One is the auctioneer's clerk. One is my supervisor of our tax collection who handles the proceeds of money. So I haven't even really looked at the names. I recognize some faces there as past legislators were there and some staff people were there. But as far as the buyers of the auction, I really can't tell you whether they were local or distant. I don't know.
Thank you.
Martha?
So you said 88,000?
Net, yes.
Okay, so that's not going to do it for the sales tax for December.
No, not quite, but I did my best.
Jim?
Rick, I'm sorry. How many properties were auctioned?
8.
8. So that our average over the last 10 years has been 10 properties going to auction, right?
I sent you an email, yeah, and I right. think I have a copy of that here. I don't even think it's that high.
Right. Yeah.
You're right, 10. Yeah, I went back to 2002, right. and our average sales per year is 10.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Rick. We're past time for our break. We'll take 10 minutes. Are there any resolutions to be added to or withdrawn from the agenda? Let's do the consent agenda. Advisory board appointments to the Strategic Tourism Planning Board, Brett Bozard and Douglas Levine. Out of the Planning, Development, and Environmental Quality Committee, Resolution A.
Off. Sorry.
Carol, I know you're going to ask to abstain on some of these. Resolution B, award of bid, bridge replacement, Game Farm Road over Cascadilla Creek in the towns of Dryden and Ithaca. Resolution C, authorization to execute an agreement with Cornell University bridge replacement, Game Farm Road over Cascadilla Creek in the towns of Dryden and Ithaca. Resolution D, audit of final payment, Nelcorp Electrical Contracting Corporation, Tompkins County Recycling and Solid Waste Center upgrade contract number 1B, electrical construction. Resolution C, budget adjustment to transfer funds from recycling and materials management equipment reserve to department equipment for HVAC units. Resolution F, Resolution F is off. Out of Health and Human Services Committee, Resolution G, authorization to increase hours, Environmental Health, Health Department, Health and Human Services Committee. Resolution H, budget adjustment and contracting authority, Department of Social Services. Resolution I, budget adjustment for balancing incentive program, caregiver support program for 2017, County Office for the Aging. Can I have a motion on the consent agenda? Anna? Seconded by Martha. All in favor of the consent agenda, raise your hand. Those opposed, that's unanimous. Let's go to standing and special committees. We'll start with Budget, Capital, and Personnel Committee. Jim Dennis is the chair.
Thank you, Mike. I have one resolution. The other three we passed earlier. I have one authorized in public hearing. On proposed local law number D of 2017, a local law overriding the tax levy limit for 2018, and I would move that.
Is there a second? Seconded by Dooley. Discussion.
The meeting is July 6th, and this is set for a July 6th meeting, and I just wanted to bring that to everyone's attention. At that July 6th meeting, there's a possibility that I would bring a member filed for the second part of the resolution, which actually allows us to go over the cap if need be. But I'm rethinking when we may do that, whether it would be at that meeting or a subsequent meeting. So at least there will be a public hearing on this on that day.
Questions for Jim?
No.
Sorry, we haven't voted yet. Are we ready to vote? All those in favor, please raise your hand. Are there any opposed? That's unanimous.
Let me just say a couple things on the July 10, I believe it is, we are having a regular meeting, and we will be speaking with STPB, board issues, board people. Tom Knipe will be here. We were going to do that in June, and and one of our members was not in the House, so we moved it to July, and I'm hoping we can have that discussion at that time. So, and there will be, I'm not aware of what item, other items will be on the agenda, but that's the next time we're meeting. So, thank you.
Any questions? Thank you, Jim. Let's go to Jail Study Committee. Rich John is the chair.
Thank you, Mike. We had, I thought, just an excellent meeting on June 15th. And I just want to take a moment to share with you some of the information we received. We had a report on the College Initiative Upstate Program from Benay Rubenstein, and she is the program founder. And the idea is to take people who have either been in jail or have been arrested and get them into college. And you would think this would be a logistically really difficult thing, and I think it is. Yet this program has been remarkably effective. I don't have the numbers, the actual numbers in hand, but it's in the neighborhood of 40 people, 46 maybe, that have taken advantage of this program since it was started last year. And, you know, hearing the earlier discussion about TC3, again, it's a shout-out to TC3, the effort they've made to make sure these people find their way in, that they're supported while they're there, and they're successful. And Vinay was able to share with us grade point averages of these students, and they're really good. You know, they are college students. So that was just excellent news. It's great to hear good news, and that is clearly good news. We also had a report from Diane Hessler from TST BOCES, and she is responsible for administration of the high school equivalency classes that are given in the jail and the related classes that they provide to prisoners. And again, we've got really dedicated people working to bring education to people who really need it and who need a second chance. And I just think they're doing a great job. Finally, we had a speaker come and present to us. Dr. Sheila Vakaria Long from Island University came up and did a presentation on harm reduction. And particularly, I'm sure not describe it anywhere near as well as she did, but it's really looking at addiction issues from a different model rather than addiction. It's drug use verging into misuse, that the idea that drugs are used on a spectrum and that you can look at many different drugs, such as certainly opiates, but also marijuana and caffeine and nicotine and the different factors that come into their use and how there are levels. Say I certainly drink coffee every day, and how there's some drugs that can be managed at a certain level and some that you don't have to use very much and it can get into a dangerous level, but that we want to think about harm reduction. And it led to a really good discussion. Bill Russin was there from CARS about the Ithaca Plan and the various initiatives that are underway to try to think about our drug issues in our community in a different way. So it was just a great conversation. The only other thing I'd like to just mention is that CGR, our consultants, are finalizing their report. We anticipate getting it in early July, and it should be public at that point prior to our July meeting. And I should have had the date of the Jail Study Committee in July, if anybody has it at hand. 20th. Thank you. I think that's going to be a very interesting meeting with the report coming out. So lots to do, but a good process so far. Anybody has questions or further comment.
Anna, then Dan.
I just want to end. That was a really great summary. There's a phrase that is really helpful for people that I wanted to just add, which is that in education, we're finding that student-centered learning is much more effective. And all the exams, all of the, testing, that is found to be most effective. When we talk about healthcare, patient-centered care is the most efficacious. And essentially harm reduction is client-centered care. It is the acknowledgement that if you meet a person where they are and you build trust and you build confidence and you build self-efficacy, that they will, with dignity, follow a path to their own health. And so it is encouraging and supporting that path and walking with them on that path. So it's the point is, if you remove the judgment and, you know, what the world should look like or not look like, and you just look at the practical, meet somewhere and where they are, it's much more effective. So that's just the science that she's coming from, which is her research.
Dan?
Binay Rubenstein and the college program she's working in, did she submit a written report?
She did, and I'd be happy to share that.
Thank you.
Yeah. In fact, I have it here. I should have read some statistics out of it.
Is there an electronic version? Or? Either way.
I'll get that out.
Thank you.
It's good news. It's really good news.
Thank you.
Thank you, Rich.
Thank you.
We had a brief report from Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee, less than it being Claiborne before she had to leave. Old Library Committee has not met. Questions? Yes.
Yeah. Do you know where they are with the project?
I haven't had any update since my last report here. Okay. Public Safety Committee, back to Rich.
Thank you, Mike. Again, I thought we had a very informative and good discussion at our Public Safety Committee. The principal item of discussion was talking about the reentry program. As the legislature knows, this is a recently funded program to try to focus and target the transition from somebody in jail to moving out of jail and mitigating the risks associated with of just relapsing into the same behaviors that got them into jail before, with the idea of reducing recidivism. And in brief summary, what we're finding is this is a very difficult process. I think we've made some good progress in terms of learning about how to do this program, and it's coming along. I think it's critical. Everybody agreed that we need to continue to improve this, but some parts of our alternatives to incarceration I think are easier to implement than others, and this one is really challenging. You know you have a lot of people, frankly, who get out of jail and just want to be left alone and go back to where they were, and that's understandable. What we really want to do is we want to have people not come back to jail, and trying to find the right trust levels and the proper level of support when somebody leaves jail, there's a lot going on there. But it was a good discussion, and I think we're getting to a better place on that. But it is a long-term project, was my takeaway.
Questions? Thank you, Rich. Let's go to Health and Human Services Committee. Anna Kellis is the chair.
I'm going to look at my agenda really quickly. I have writing notes at the same time, just making sure I don't have a resolution. I do have a resolution, it looks like. Yes. Appropriation from contingent and authorization to increase Food Net Meals on Wheels subcontract, and I would like to move that.
Seconded by Dooley.
So
discussion.
I was just going to introduce this by saying essentially this is a situation where we have, like all of our other agencies that we work with, try and bring them to a living wage. That was
something we had discussed with the director of the Office of the Aging, and because she had been informed that a program that was a state program that would have supported the living wage for the Meals on Wheels working group, we removed that funding from last year's over-target request. That program actually was cut, and now we unfortunately are coming back to reinstate that through contingency. So you've heard everyone talk about Meals on Wheels and how incredibly important it is. I've been there recently. Their work is amazing. The amount of people that they feed is amazing. The staff is exceptionally professional. I can't see not supporting and making sure that they have everything they need to continue.
And I was remiss. I should have moved this up earlier in the agenda. I apologize to the folks that are out there. Jim.
I think the interesting point of this is that I believe this was left out of the New York State budget this year. And as opposed to, this is not as a result of anything that's going on at the federal level. So, again, we're being treated somewhat not well by our colleagues in the New York State legislature. So.
Again?
That is the case.
This requires a short form roll call.
Mr. McKenna?
Yes.
Mr. Klein?
Yes.
Are there any no's? That's unanimous. Anything else, Anna?
Yep. So I wanted to follow up. As all of you guys know, I have asked the department heads to each month have one of the department heads present so that we can start to understand more what is happening with the services through the Health and Human Services arena, which is the arena where a lot of people in the community interact with the county. And they chose a theme this year of housing, and the first guinea pigs this month, was Health and Human Services, or Human Services Coalition. It's been that kind of day. And it was an amazing presentation. They presented on their program, which is the continuum of care. And there were some things that stuck out that I thought would be very important for everyone here to know. One of the most important things is that the funding for the continuum of care programs, which is a program designed to help the homelessness, to provide shelter, housing specifically, not shelter, housing for the homeless population and at risk for homelessness. And that HUD funding has been decreasing steadily. And I can just point out some numbers. 2012, the numbers were 227,000. In 2016, those numbers were 187,000, which reduced the number of beds that they can support by 266. And that is certainly of some concern. I would also note that this funding, a significant amount of this funding is on the chopping block this year. So we need to watch this closely. The other piece of information that she shared with us helped us understand the fundamental piece of this that is very important is that there are many different agencies and organizations that provide housing services for homeless people who are homeless or at risk for homelessness. And it's kind of difficult to navigate. There's like 16 different agencies. So the whole point of continuum of care is that they all are using a similar software and coordinate with each other so that if someone comes to any one of the agencies, they can do an intake and then communicate with all the other agencies and find which agency they qualify for and could get help from. One of the other issues that she brought up, however, is that the definitions of homelessness and at risk for homelessness are defined by HUD, by the federal government, in order to receive HUD funding, and those definitions can be very narrow. And that can limit some people who are eligible for support through these agencies. I think that there were many people who were a bit disturbed, actually, to hear the extent of how narrow they were. So when we have temperatures under 32, we all know that is a case in which we do the emergency low temperature that we have at the state law. But if it is not the case and it's above 32, someone actually has to be homeless the night before, for example, if they want to receive support. So if a person, for example, slept the night before on a friend's couch, they are not eligible for support. If they slept out in the woods, then they are eligible for support. So if someone's coming out of prison, for example, they need to be homeless for a night before coming in and getting support if they were not homeless before going into jail. So there are some very strange quirks that I think is important for us to keep track of. And those were some of the highlights from that report. I also wanted to bring up the fact that the $50,000 contingency fund did pass count to the HHS committee. That will be going to budget next. That's the $50,000 we put in contingency fund to support COC projects. And they have selected several projects, which I did not write down at this moment. The last thing I want to mention is that we did get a presentation from the Office of Human Rights, Director Karen Baer, on the income discrimination law. There was a robust conversation that we had. It was intended to be information only. So if anyone wants to catch up on what law, the outline of the law is right now, the draft law, it is in the agenda. It looks like it will come up probably for further discussion. There were certainly some edits requested. I have a long list that I will be meeting with them to share mine because I didn't want to share too much. It was at the end of the meeting. And I think I have taken up enough time to give updates.
Questions? Thank you, Emma. Let's go to Facilities and Infrastructure Committee. David McKenna is the chair.
Thank you, Mike. F&I has actually met twice since our last meeting. Mostly the original meeting, the first meeting, was the various resolutions that were passed under the F&I tonight, and with the exception of the one that we're holding out, and we'll do that in a minute. In addition to that, we got an overview of the upcoming capital program for 2018 to 2022, and Joe has agreed to give a small outline on that. But before we go to that, I think we should probably do the one agenda or the one resolution that was pulled, authorization to enter into an agreement to procure electricity, ID number 7056, and I so move.
Seconded by Glenn.
Any questions on that?
This is the one that Carol's going to abstain on. That was the reason it was pulled.
No, this is the...
I'm sorry, am I on the wrong one?
This is Resolution F, I believe.
Yes.
This is...
Yes, F.
The Mega Rex resolution.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Okay, I confused myself here. All right, discussion on Resolution F. Carol.
All right, thank you, Mike and Dave. And Jonathan and Joe and Arel and the people from the planning department who've answered the many questions that I've had. I've just spent a lot of time on thinking about this one over the last couple of days, as I have in the past when these agreements to procure electricity have come up to us in the past. And I have two primary questions that I was trying to answer. And one has to do with whether, in fact, there would be an opportunity loss if we did this now, at either 2 or 4 years, will this contract, which, has a specified amount of energy in it, or of RECs in it and energy, subtract from our ability
and agility to engage in similar opportunities to what we've been able to do with Liberty Solar and Gravity Renewables over the next few years, when we know that the energy world is changing really rapidly. 2 years ago, I don't know, was it 2 years since Gravity? It's been more than 2 years, but not much. You know, not knowing that was an opportunity. And, boy, we purchase about 6 megawatts of electricity per year. Is that what it is? And they're going to, on average, we think, provide 3 of them. So I wanted to figure out, might there be more opportunities? Might the technologies change that would give us some pause as to whether we ought to be signing to get our energy from a wind farm in the Midwest, essentially? For example, if Gravity were to come back with a hydro plant right here in Tompkins County, which we have a lot of water here, not only could we get could we save money on energy and get RECs, but we could get the tax income if we did that. So that was an important consideration of mine, and I wanted to find out, would we be foreclosing opportunities? Another example of the kind of opportunity that could come up, and I'm hoping really would come up, would be the Cayuga Power Plant. If they wanted to establish the same kind of relationship with us that Gravity did, would we be able to accommodate that? Because, boy, we sure should if we can. If they were to want to put storage solutions and New York State were to declare that that's eligible for RECs, could we do that? So I had some concerns about that, and I looked over the contract and spent a lot of time talking to Jonathan about it, and as I understand the answer, the answer seems to... Well, let me go into the other question. It does include a specified purchase quantity and an early termination clause, but it sounds on further investigation that's not a huge penalty were we to terminate early. And in fact, in the past, we were able to not purchase as much as we had contracted for the last time, and we didn't have a penalty, so hopefully that would last again. The other question that I had have to do with the RECs. The whole RECs market is really complicated. Not all RECs are created equal. Some states and some programs that certify RECs allow different kinds of power to be counted in the RECs. And so are we sure that the questions I had were we sure that ours were going to be from true renewables? Some RECs, even those from Green E, which is an independent program, it's not an EPA program, it is an independent program, and they certify their RECs, but they have different elements of their program, and under some of them, they allow natural gas to be counted. I have satisfied myself that our particular Green E RECs that we're talking about in this contract are not. But I also went on their site and found that they have they report every year on companies that are late certifying back to them as to whether they have actually met the terms. And a couple of those are some big wind companies. I don't know I never got the name of what our wind company that we'd be matched with would be, but Plymouth Rock Energy is one. EDF Trading is one that's been delinquent. Apex Energy, Wind RECs, have been delinquent in the past. They're due to report again as of June 1st, and that's not posted yet. So having looked into all of that, I think that I'm being assured that those two questions that I had, that we would be able in the future to jump on some new opportunities should they happen, although it might cost us more. And I would hope that this body would still do that. And while I don't really love the concept of RECs, it is the game that's played out there.
Excellent.
So with that, I do think that the energy world really might change, certainly within 4 years. It would take us 2 years if an opportunity came up to develop it. So I'm fine with a two-year contract, but I would like, Joe, your take on whether we might take out the resolved, if I were to offer an amendment to extend, not the option to extend for 2 years. If I were to suggest an amendment, how would you feel about that?
I'd be fine with that.
Okay. Well, with that, I would like to amend to... do you have a question first? Do you want me to wait? Okay. I would like to amend to take out the second resolved.
Is there a second? Seconded by Anna. Discussion on the amendment to remove the second resolved. Anna?
I really think it's minor. I Joe and I have talked about this briefly in the past. I think we've had so many random conversations, I'm not 100% sure which one is which, but we can just bring this back in 2 years if we want to continue, so I don't think it's a big deal, and if it creates some flexibility and we don't know, it is an unknown and it's changing fast, I just don't think it's a big deal. So I'm fine to support it.
On the amendment, anyone else? Dooley?
No, I support removing it. I agree that the energy climate is changing rapidly.
For my part, I would leave it in because it's an option. Doesn't mean we have to renew. It means we could renew. Martha?
So the way it's written, does this imply that, would the county administrator would you have to come back to us in 2 years for, the okay on this again?
Yeah, if we wanted to extend it again, we would have to come back. So this asks for an extension through whatever, is it 2020?
Right.
So I had put in this, really at the discretion of the county administrator, it could be extended for another two-year period. So if this
now
is pulled...
Back to the legislature.
Yeah, without coming back. So if this is pulled, it simply means you will go through in 2 years what you're going through right now to grant another extender.
Again, we're debating the amendment at this point. Anyone else?
Are you only allowed right now a two-year extension from 18 to 20? I'm just thinking about every 2 years is kind of annoying.
Well, we've been quoted rates for this two-year period. The reason we brought this to you is because we have an opportunity to lock in right now at very favorable rates, and we want to do that, and we can cover this entire two-year period that ends in 2020 with this lower rate.
And that's as far out as we can go with this.
Right.
So, but hold on. But if we extended this agreement, if we left this in, and if the rates were still the same, could the rates still be the same? But if we don't do it, the rates might... We don't lock that rate
so
in.
So if you took out the option to go longer,
right,
it would simply mean that if there were beneficial rates that came up between now and then, I'd come back to you and propose that we stretch this even longer. Or this would lapse under its own terms, and we'd have to come back with you with the new rate package in hand and explain why we think another extension would be appropriate.
Right, but I'm not being clear. Right now, Dan told me that the new rate is 0.05793 kilowatts an hour.
Right.
If we leave this in, does this allow us extending it to those two extra years at that rate?
No, so that low rate applies through September of 2020.
Okay.
Period. And then it ends.
Okay.
So we wouldn't. This option doesn't say we can continue to lock in that rate. It really depends on what the market is doing at that time.
Got it.
We're ready to vote on the amendment.
It really doesn't make any difference one way or the other.
Dave?
So it really doesn't make any difference which way we go with that.
Except that we get more votes.
All right. On the amendment, which would delete that resolved, all those in favor, please raise your hand. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. All those opposed. 1, 2, 3, 4. Did I get them all? 11?
We're missing two.
Okay. So that didn't receive 8 votes, so the amendment fails.
That's only 11 votes. We have 12 people here.
All right, let's hands up again for those in favor. 1, 2, 3, 4. Is your hand up, Jim?
Yes.
5, 6, 7, 8. Those opposed. 1, 2, 3, 4. That's 12. All right. That is agreed to. So the amendment is now part of the. We're going back to the discussion on the main motion with the amendment, and I have Dan Klein.
Thank you. I just wanted to give a little information for anyone listening that what we're actually getting here is a proposal to actually lower our electric rates, which sounds great, and it will result in a savings of approximately $70,000 over the 2 years of the contract.
Anna?
I didn't have my hand raised.
Carol?
I had another one that I'm hoping will be seen as friendly. On line 33, we talk about Tompkins County wishing to purchase RECs to supply county structures with electricity so that 100% of the county's consumption can be attributed to carbon-free energy production. Our comprehensive plan refers in greenhouse gas emissions. It's on or about page 85. I have a draft, and the pages might change slightly. So I want to amend that to read 100% of the county's electricity use, can be attributed to carbon and methane-free energy production.
You're asking if that's friendly?
Well, I'd like to move it, and we'll see if it's friendly.
First you ask if it's friendly. You want me to ask that, or you just want to move it? Who moved that? That's
Dave.
Dan. Dave. It's Dave. Dave, is that friendly to you?
Yes.
Is it friendly to the seconder?
Glenn,
is it friendly to you?
No.
All right. So you'll, okay. If you want it, Carol, you'll have to move it.
Well, I guess I'd like to move it. And if I get a seconder, I'll talk about why.
Is there a second to add the word methane on line 33, was it? Seconded by Dooley. Discussion on the amendment.
So
Anna?
So I'm trying to wrap my brain around this, and, you know, I'm certainly one that wants to see a reduction in greenhouse gas emissions for sure. My concern with this is that this is not how RECs are currently calculated, and it won't be implementable. We have a standard that has been updated, proposed by some of our Cornell faculty about the impact of methane and how we're measuring it that's different. There's all these things happening with respect to changing, and this is total ignorance on my part, so I guess I'm asking Joe to maybe catch me up. Is it practical? Can we measure? Is this how RECs are implemented? Can you just update us?
Yeah, no, I'm reluctant to get into the REC thing because we could go really deep on RECs, but it basically, we're buying wind power, renewable energy certificates. So with every kilowatt hour that we purchase of this electricity, it's going to support, some of our money is going to support wind generation someplace in the country. So it is the equivalent of us buying wind power. So I don't think Carol's language would affect the substance of what's expressed here. I'm going to look over to Jonathan to make sure I'm correct, but I don't think it affects the substance of the resolution.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't affect this, what we're purchasing. I suppose one could look at it that these wrecks are wind and they are, you know, methane-free, but, you know, whether that is an accurate statement of the, you know, the county desire is a different issue. But it wouldn't affect the actual, what we're actually purchasing.
Dan, then Carol.
I believe methane is a carbon, so it already, when it says it's carbon-free, it includes methane. It can't have methane in it. So your amendment's unnecessary. I mean, I'll vote for it because it doesn't matter, but it's really, it doesn't mean anything.
Carol?
Yeah, so I think that there's real misunderstanding on the part. Most of the public doesn't know that methane, the structure of methane is CH4 and includes carbon. The public thinks about, you know, carbon and methane in with different parts of their understanding. So we would just clarify what it is we do and the way we specify what we define as renewable in our comprehensive plan here.
On the amendment, Martha?
Well, I just want to point out that we are the savings of $70,000 over 2 years with this new rate. We would be saving more, except that about half of our electricity is coming from the hydro plant in Waterloo, so we're not even buying that much out of this contract. Is that right?
It doesn't really work that way. I mean, you pay what you pay, and then you have a deduction, a credit. So it does matter that you're paying less.
All right. Are ready to vote on the amendment. Carol's amendment to add the word methane in line, I believe, 33. All those in favor, please raise your hand. One. Keep them up so I can see them. One, two, three, four, five, six. Those opposed. One, two, three, four, five, six. That fails. Now we're back on the main motion. Martha Robertson.
Oh, I said
okay, well, you were next in line on the main motion. Ready to vote on the main motion. Dooley, you want to speak?
I do. I'll be opposing this. I, Joe, it was interesting to hear you say we're getting all this from wind because the resolution doesn't identify where we're getting it from. I heard Carol talk about doing what sounded like an incredible amount of research trying to track down what we might be getting. The last time I tried to do that with Mega, the wind farm that I finally found we were getting our wrecks supposedly from was not something that we were helping build. It was an existing wind farm owned by one corporation, which was owned by another, and we were just contributing to their profits. So to me, that was not a good use of our county money. I would be much happier seeing us contribute to construction of a new wind farm or something like that. The whole Rex game, I think, is a sickness which has been adopted for people who like market solutions. But it's not a good one. It's very hard to make sure that the RECs you're getting anywhere, anytime, actually do what they say. If you think you're planting trees in the tropics, there's almost no way to check that that's what's happening. So in general, I just do not support RECs, so I cannot support this resolution.
Martha?
I just saw Jonathan's expression, and I'm dying to know what you're thinking.
No, I mean, in a sense, Dooley is correct in the sense that it doesn't go to the construction. It goes to the actual operation. That's how RECs work. That's how it is. You know, you get the REC credit as you produce. It doesn't come with production, but the idea is that when you are building the plant or whatever, you know that you're going to get the REC from production, and that's what encourages you to build the plant. or whatever. So, I mean, that's just how recs work. I know Dooley doesn't like recs, but she describes it correctly, but that's how it works.
So it's a payback. Sorry.
Yeah, essentially, I mean, you want to build a renewable plant, and you are entitled to RECs for the renewable energy that you produce, but you generate the RECs as you're producing the energy. It doesn't come up front. So I'm not disagreeing. She's correct about that.
Yeah. I just want to make sure that it's clear to the public and clear to everybody who's here that it's to address the initial capital, but it's after the fact. I mean, it's a reimbursement in a way to reduce the return on investment, right, like so that it is not as far out as it would be without the RECs, which would make it not plausible economically.
Right. I mean, that's the idea. That's how it's supposed to be.
I just wanted to make sure that that was clear.
All right. Let's get this to a vote. Carol?
I just wanted to thank my colleagues for hearing and adjusting to at least some of my concerns. And while I believe that RECs are a system that creates a very complicated market, and if something that could be done much more simply, I will support this because it is the way that that renewable energy is handled today in the United States. And while I'll continue to advocate for it to be handled more directly, including by us, I will support this.
So we're going to vote on Resolution F as proposed with the amendment by Carol, which was approved, deleting the authorization of the county administrator to extend it by 2 years. So all those in favor now, please raise your hand. Those opposed? We have one opposed. That passes. Dave, anything else?
Just the capital plan draft that Joe went over. I've asked him to say a few things about it, and I figure he'll do a much better job than I will, so...
I doubt that, but we did do a draft capital plan. It is in the F&I packet, so if you're interested to see how it's starting to shape up, the information is available in the F&I packet. There are a couple of new projects. There are a couple that have dropped out. There are two new bridges, Ludlowville Road over Salmon Creek and the Cortland Street Bridge. So there are two new bridges in the mix, one of which has significant offsets in terms of aid. The other is all local. There's also some proposed improvements to the highway barn, including a vehicle washing bay. It's new. The idea is to preserve the life of the trucks. And so that's a part of the plan. In draft form, it hasn't been finalized yet. You'll find some new airport equipment, the heavy snowplow type equipment that's in there, and a couple of new projects at the airport as well, including a master plan. It's probably a good time to tie a lot of these things that are going on together. There's also a brush removal, an obstacle removal project in there that's not cheap. When you do this at an airport, we've learned, it's not cheap, so that's in there as well. There are also some improvements to the recycling facility, which is now, is it 20 years old? It's aging, so there's some proposed improvements there. So in the packet, if you'll look at it, we've tried to create an easy narrative that explains in bulleted form what it is, how much it costs, when it will occur, kind of a snapshot of what's involved. And then the back page of the packet is the heavy number stuff. What will the expected debt service be? How much do we expect to spend per year? How does it relate to levy and so forth? So it's all in the packet. If you have any questions about it, let me know, because it is still a work in progress. We won't finish it until sometime, probably latter part of the summer, because I'd like to bring it to you. I think we've committed to bring to you the final version of the plan before the budget, the intensity of the budget process really gets going. So we'll try to bring it to you early. So let me know what you think.
Any questions for Dave? David, thank you.
Thanks, Joe. Appreciate that.
Our Transportation Committee meets on Monday the 26th at 10 a.m. right here. It's looking to be kind of an interesting discussion. We're talking about ride-hailing service. We're getting the regulations that have come out of New York State, really out of three departments of the state. We are going to have Julie Holcomb from the city, the city clerk, who talked to us about the taxi cab law over there. We're going to have representatives from the taxi cab companies come talk to us. We're likely to have representatives from Lyft and possibly Uber. And I think it'll be a lively discussion. We've got people who have weighed in already with emails and other things on both sides. And it's I think we're in kind of an interesting position to take a look at it. In other counties, Suffolk County, a large county, is still debating whether to opt out, having to do with a request on their part that level one sexual offenders continue to be barred from driving for ride-hailing services, even though it's gone beyond the seven-year limitation. Nassau County wants 50 cents a ride, which was, I believe, the original proposal that there was going to be a shared cost, or part of the cost was going to come in for and could be used for mass transportation. And that was pulled early in the season when they started looking at the bill so that all the money would go to New York State and nothing to the locals. Questions, Will?
When is that meeting again?
Monday the 26th at 10 a.m. here.
So I'm glad you're doing that. And do you expect to be coming to any kind of decision relevant to it, or is this just an information session?
There won't be any resolution proposed one way or the other at this point. So we're doing information gathering.
Okay. I think there have been real problems with the taxi rate structure, and I don't know if that. I'm not even clear at what level that's decided,
at the present time, the taxis are controlled by the city.
By the city, and the towns are going along with their
only some towns. The town of Ithaca, I believe, and I believe Cuba Heights. The towns further out have no regulation.
Okay.
Jim, Dennis.
Is it my impression that if the county does not opt out, it becomes a reality on July 1st?
It's going to become a reality even before we meet, we could opt
June
out.
June 29th?
Yes.
So our only option is to opt out if we're going to.
That's correct.
Okay.
Martha?
So we don't get any funds from the taxi system right now?
No.
Okay. And is there a deadline for opting out?
I don't believe so. Anna?
That was just what I wanted to point out. We can opt out at any time. We could test it out. We could give it a pilot test, you know, run. We could see how it works. If it doesn't work, we can opt out. I mean, I think that's something that we really also should keep in mind.
Carol?
So what kind of – where would one make an invitation to people who currently drive taxis to understand that you're having that meeting, which I unfortunately can't attend, but, you know, and to be able to give input? Or would the committee talk about a way to try to solicit input from people who are currently driving in Tompkins County?
I think that you raised that question last meeting, and I, the way I responded, and I still feel the same way, if we decide we want to take action, it would probably be something like a local law that would require a public hearing.
Right, but in terms of making the decision about whether we want to do that, is there research we could do first of some kind into what's the experience of those who own the taxi companies and those who drive taxis and those who are passengers. So, but it's the drivers that...
Drivers are welcome to come and speak to us at privilege of the floor.
So my experience in the 2 years that I couldn't travel, my friends got tired of me hitting them up for rides to every meeting and every appointment, and I took a lot of taxis just about every day, at least once, was that the taxi drivers, for the most part, were people who were coming from an hour or 2 hours away to drive 12-hour days here. So I don't know how we reach people who aren't necessarily reading the Ithaca Journal or, you know to look on our website. So maybe some thought could be given with Marcia or somebody could give some thought as to how we can try to reach people before we even decide whether to take it up.
Thank you. Good suggestion. Who else? Martha?
Could we impose, any money per ride or anything like that? No.
We cannot. We can either say yes or no. We can only say no. We really can't say yes. It's going to happen whether we say yes or not. We can only say no. That's all. And no, we can't impose our own regulations or fees.
Okay, thanks.
Will?
So I want to respond to Anna's point. There is a cost to moving forward, and that's that if people start signing up and doing what they need to do to become drivers, there is a cost. My basic problem with the ride-hailing services such as Uber is that it's shifting the burden onto the drivers, the liability, the risks. The experience for customers is actually quite good. I've used them in other cities, and I've met some wonderful people. But I'm concerned about the larger system. And that being said, I'm not thrilled by our local taxi system either. So I wish there was some way that we could take a comprehensive look before committing. It sounds like the default position is it happens, and then it's going to be very, very hard, if not impossible, to stop it once it's in place, because I think it will be perceived very positively by many, many in the community.
Okay. Well, if you're interested in the topic, please come to our meeting. Let's go next to Government Operations Committee. Dan Klein is the chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Our next meeting is Wednesday, July 5th at 3:30 in this room. The only two things I know of so far are items from our information technology department that were supposed to be on our agenda a few months ago and they got bumped because the agenda was just too crowded. So we are going to hear short reports about the county's role in the 2020 census, and things are actually going on right now already. The preliminary part of this is that we have to develop the database of addresses in the county and how people are going to be counted. And so the county does that, and we do that on behalf of all the other municipalities in the county as well. It's a shared service, but it only happens once every 10 years, so Joe says we can't really use it for credit. And then we're also going to get a short presentation about the intranet, which is the way the closed system that employees can access. That is my report.
Questions? Carol?
When do we need to start preparing for the next census in other ways?
I don't have an exact answer for that, but there is a established timeline. We've done it a bunch of times. In fact, Greg Potter, our IT director, was in on the last one, so he personally knows how to do it. There are certain steps. So we have to submit our database of addresses really soon, within the next few months, if I'm not mistaken. And then we have to wait, and it comes back certified, and then there's another step after that. And stay tuned, and I'll keep reporting on it.
Martha?
But as new housing gets built, are there updates, up until the date they start collecting?
Yes. I don't know exactly how that works or when the cutoff is, but yes. The way our IT department assembles this database is by talking with assessment and talking with the county clerk and talking with other, and looking at other databases and pulling it all together. So since those will be updated, there is some mechanism, but I don't know. I'll let you know after our GO meeting. In fact, I will ask that question.
Dan, July 4th is coming up here quickly.
It's going to be a quiet July 4th.
I understand that we continue to be one of the counties that does not permit the sale of ground-based sparklers and fireworks. Is that correct?
That's correct. It'll be nice and quiet here in Tompkins County.
I just want to make sure that the people of Tompkins County understand that even if they go to Schuyler County or if they go to Cortland County and there are fireworks for sale at Walmart and other places like that, that they are not allowed to bring them into Tompkins County and set them off. Is that correct?
That is an accurate statement of the law, yes.
Not only can they buy them here, but they can't set them off here. Right. I think it's important to remind people.
Well, where can they buy them, Mike?
Anywhere from Canada to South Carolina.
It is a good reason.
See tents set up at Christmas time. They had shelves in Walmart in Portland with them on. But I just want to make sure people know about them.
That is a good reminder. Thank you. And I also remind you that it was largely prohibited due to the recommendation of the firefighters in Tompkins County who felt like storage of this material was not safe.
Anything else for Dan? Thank you, Dan.
Thank you.
Let's go to Planning, Development, and Environmental Quality Committee. Martha Robertson is chair.
Thank you. We had a special meeting today, and Anna and Dan came as well, and Dan, and I saw Mike there, about the housing strategy. You all saw an outline of the strategy before, and that's been shopped to a bunch of different public meetings, and Megan McDonald presented the fleshed out, the full narrative of a housing strategy, and got feedback from the committee. It was very well received. It's 9 pages. So we are going to, we didn't actually vote the resolution to bring it to the legislature yet. We're going to do that at our next meeting. So committee members and anybody else who has a chance to look at it, because it's online right now, send comments, any kind of suggestions or comments to Megan McDonald by end of the day tomorrow. She will then incorporate those and get them in our committee packet for next Thursday. The PDEC meets a week earlier than usual. It meets next Thursday, the 29th, at which time we will, among other things, adopt this the housing strategy and move a resolution to bring it to the legislature. So that was our most recent meeting. And I have a few resolutions.
Ask something related to what you just said?
Yes, Carol.
It would be helpful to have a Word document of the strategy in addition to what we've got, the PDF in our agenda packet, so that it would be easier to send Megan our comments.
Yeah, there's a way to do that in PDF. You can pull down comments and add a little note or a comment, but I will ask her to send out a Word if she's got that.
Online, you can also convert PDF to doc. There are programs.
Okay, we'll figure that out.
That I don't have, but I'd like, so. Okay. So I have Resolution A, authorization to continue the homeownership program and housing rehabilitation program through the use of program income funds and to contract with Ithaca Neighborhood Housing Services, and I so move.
Carol has permission to abstain.
Thank you. That's what I was going to request.
Been seconded by Anna. Discussion? All those in favor, please raise your hand. Are there any opposed? One abstention.
Okay. Resolution O is negative declaration for authorizing disbursement of the Community Housing Development Fund award to Amici House, and I so move.
Seconded by Anna again.
Same issue.
Discussion? Carol's asking to abstain on that. She has permission. Are we ready to vote? Those in favor, please raise your hand. Those opposed? Unanimous, except one abstention.
And Resolution P. I guess I should have said the document numbers. This is 7064, authorizing disbursement of the Community Housing Development Fund award to Amici House. So
So moved.
Seconded. Hannah, you keep your hand right up there.
I'll just hold it. I like the Amici house. I'm good.
All right. They're moved and seconded. Discussion? Carol?
Same issue.
Carol has permission to abstain.
This is really
further
exciting.
Further discussion?
Yeah, it's just really exciting to actually move this forward and get the funding out the door and see this project get going.
Vote. Those in favor, please raise your hand.
Wait. Could you hold a second? Do I have this issue?
No, I don't know why you're even... you don't.
Is this... One of those projects, INHS is operating in.
A little bit of a
TCA project.
Contract.
This is a TCA project.
Yeah, they have retained INHS.
All right, then you don't have to abstain.
Yeah.
All right, all in favor, please raise your hand. Those opposed. Carol, are you voting?
No, I can't because
so you're abstaining.
If this is a TCA project,
yes. Right.
They are
it's
consulting with.
Except one extension. That's fine. Just want to make sure we get it recorded correctly.
So I'll try to get the Word document and make sure that gets sent to everybody.
Anything else, Martha?
No.
Thank you. Let's take the minutes of the previous meeting, June 6th. Someone want to move them? Rich? Seconded by?
Glenn.
Discussion? All in favor, please raise your hand. Are there any opposed? We have one opposed. Any unfinished business? Is there a motion to adjourn by Carol? By Anna. Who's got a second? Seconded by Martha. All in favor? Opposed? We're adjourned. Thank you to Kathy Covert. Thank you to Michelle Podor. Thank you to Marsha Lynch and Jim Blizzard for all of your help tonight.